president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Harley Carnes. It's the end of one of the most effective political careers in years on Capitol Hill, and its critics allege one that went wrong. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss says Texas Congressman Tom DeLay is resigning.
DeLay says he wants to avoid a political battle for re-election that polls show he might lose, Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn.
I think he's doing what he believes is the right thing for himself and the Republican Party and certainly his family.
DeLay is facing felony charges in Texas and is in the center of a growing lobby scandal in Washington, says Democratic Senate Leader Harry Reid.
It's not about him. It's about a culture of corruption that has developed in this Congress.
Two former members of DeLay's staff have pled guilty and are cooperating with prosecutors in a bribery probe centering on super lobbyist and DeLay friend Jack Abramoff. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Delta pilots took a pay cut of nearly 33% already. Now the airline is demanding they take another cut of nearly 19%, meaning they'll be making just over half of what they did. And they say their families can't afford that. Delta has gone to court to get permission to just do it, start writing smaller paychecks. Pilots have voted, roughly 95% of them, to go on strike if the company does that. Delta spokesman Bruce Hicks.
Delta remains committed to seeking a consensual agreement with our pilots, and we're working hard to do so.
Delta claims a pilot strike could put them out of business. A 19-year-old young man has told members of Congress, guaranteed, there are children right now doing lewd things for pedophiles in front of their computer cameras in every district in the nation. Justin Berry is his name.
Each night I wondered, were the children I knew being molested that night? Were they being filmed? Why was no one stopping this?
He knows he was one of those kids. Congress tries to answer two questions. What should they do about it? What can they do about it? A special moment in time is coming. CBS News correspondent Bill Whitney.
If you stay up past midnight and you have a digital clock, you can experience what the U.S. Naval Observatory calls a chronological oddity. It will be April 5th, 2006, and at 3 seconds past 1:02 a.m., the time and date will be 1:02:03:04:05:06. Jack Horkheimer, the 67-year-old host of Stargazer on public TV, says 10 years ago he would have had a party, but he plans to sleep through this event. Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Nearly one of every three men in America is not just overweight, but obese. 31%. 71% are overweight. For women, the latest numbers are 62% overweight, 33%. One in three are obese. And for children, it's 34 and 17%. Worst of all, the CDC says the trend in each category is up. More people getting fatter. On Wall Street, the Dow gained about 59 points to close at nearly 11,204 today. The Nasdaq picked up more than 8. This is CBS News.
The following is an OnStar conversation.
OnStar Emergency, this is Denise.
Yes, someone just hit me.
Are you injured?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and get emergency services coming up to your location.
If your airbags deploy, OnStar receives a signal and calls to check on you.
Hi, this is Denise from the emergency team of OnStar. I have a vehicle crash with airbag deployment. It's on County Highway 74. I'm at a conference you went.
Okay, are you injured?
I think I'm bleeding from the side of my face.
Did you hit another vehicle?
Another vehicle hit me.
Okay, I'll get somebody out.
No one offers more vehicles with the safety of OnStar than Chevy.
There's two state troopers pulling up now. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Choose a vehicle that could help save your life. Choose a Chevy with OnStar. Chevy, America's number one brand, America's number one value, offers 16 OnStar-equipped cars and trucks. Ford, Dodge, and Toyota don't have any. To learn more, visit OnStar.com.
If we knew more about tires, we could save money on fuel. CBS News correspondent John Harchie explains.
Consumers who already have access to tire traction and wear information should also have rolling resistance stats, according to a National Academy of Sciences panel. The experts also say it's feasible to make less resistant tires, which could boost MPG 1 or 2%, though the rubber manufacturers point out
there is a trade-off between tires that have lower rolling resistance and how long they will last.
Spokesman Dan Zielinski adds good maintenance will remain important.
You can have very low rolling resistance tires, but it won't do you any good if you don't keep them properly inflated.
And he says most drivers don't check air pressure, wasting fuel. John Harchi, CBS News, Washington.
Charles Simonyi helped Microsoft create Word and Excel, so he has a few bucks. Billions, in fact. So for him, forking over $20 million for a trip to space is no big deal, and that's what he's done. No word exactly when his flight on a Soyuz will happen. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Get the good stuff.
To remove grease and grime from auto, lawnmower, marine, and tractor engines. Whether you're detailing your engine or just cleaning it up, Gunk Engine Bright will get the job done. So come to Napa and get Gunk Engine Bright or Foamy Engine Bright for just 49 cents after mail-in rebate. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff.
Sam's Club knows that behind every small business, there is a dream.
I dreamed of being on the lake. Now I have a canoe rental business.
My dream was being able to take care of children. Now I have my own preschool.
Every year, small businesses account for more than 40% of private sales in America. And
Project Voice, the American Friends Service Committee, Dr. William Beeman from Brown University. We're going to be talking to Iran in Iraq. And Stacy Sullivan, senior editor from the Institute for War and Peace Reporting. Now, the Tom DeLay resignation, this is my favorite quote of all this nonsense going on around DeLay. I refuse to allow liberal Democrats an opportunity to steal this seat with a negative personal campaign. A negative personal campaign. Let's see. He's under indictment. Two of his top aides have pleaded guilty to conspiracy with Jake Abramoff and others to corrupt public officials. He's been censored three times by the Republican-controlled House Ethics Committee. He's been questioned about his political action committee's payments of over $500,000 to his wife and daughter. So you spend and torture DeLay contributors out there. I should say spend and torture Republicans that have contributed to DeLay's campaigns or his political action committee. You know, a large chunk of your donations went right into his own pocket via his wife and his daughter's pockets. And Bush had this to say about DeLay leaving. The Republican Party won't suffer from DeLay's decision to resign from Congress. My own judgment is that our party will continue to succeed because we are the party of ideas. Now, let me just take this for a second into what Condoleezza Rice said. She was facing protesters and pointed questions, and she said that at a recent event in Europe, she was facing foreign policy experts, and they asked her whether the United States had learned anything in the last 3 years. And she said that the Bush administration has made thousands of what she called tactical mistakes in Iraq, but it was the right strategic decision to invade and topple Saddam Hussein. I want the listeners of the Peter B. Collins Show to know when she says tactical mistakes, she's blaming commanders and troops on the ground because they're the ones that are responsible for calling the tactical decisions. So this could, either she doesn't know the difference between tactics and strategy, or she's setting up the administration to now blame the troops for the failures in Iraq. So we could say, well, Ms. Rice, there were a lot of tactical errors in Iraq, but if the country had a strategy when we went to war, then maybe it wouldn't be as bad as it is now. For example, there's certain ways you can craft a strategic mission and give it to the military. Stay the course. We hear that as a strategy. But you know what? Stay the course is a slogan. It's not a strategy. We hear Vietnamization as a goal. And what by I mean Vietnamization? We're talking about when the Iraqis stand up, we'll sit down. Okay, Vietnamization is a goal. It's not a strategy, and it's not an original one. So that's the kind of ideas that the Republican Party is fielding, and so the DeLay resignation is not going to affect the Republican Party because they're the party of ideas. Some of the other ideas that the Republican Party has had, for example, as president, he's taken more vacations than any other president in our history. That's pretty good. We attack another idea, attack a country that's done us no harm. Another good idea from the Republicans is send troops into combat without the proper armament, without enough troops, and without a plan to win the peace. One of my favorites is to declare the insurgency over, as Dick Cheney did last year, but we'll have to stay there until future administrations to finish dealing with the insurgency. And, of course, popular one among other Americans is the idea to spy on Americans. I have no problem with spying on terrorists, but that's not what we're talking about. The whole problem is the illegal campaign of spying on Americans. Now, it's not just that Bush had said some pretty silly things about delay. Representative John Bonner said, "The country owes Tom a great debt of gratitude for helping lead America in a new direction. It's new, all right, but I don't know if it's good. I can say it's not good." Tom Reynolds, Republican from New York, who's the National Republican Committee Chairman, said, "But on this day, we celebrate him," he's talking about delay, "for time and again delivering on our party's bold agenda of reform." Reforming what? The deficit? So, the last person to say something stupid is the one of the leaders of the Republican Party. Don't have his name handy, but he said, he was talking about Democrats and the midterm elections, "We'd welcome any Democrat surrogates to campaign in key states. They could brag about killing the Patriot Act and criticize the terrorist surveillance program and promote their cut-and-run policy in Iraq." So the resignation as a delay has brought out a bunch of stupid statements from Republicans, and I just wanted to bring those to everybody's attention. My first guest is Pedro Rios. He's Project Voice, regional organizer for the American Friends Service Committee. He's worked for the past 3 years for the San Diego Area Office of the American Friends. He holds a position of Project Voice organizer and facilitates community-based organizing efforts in migrant neighborhoods. Pedro was born to Mexican migrants and raised in San Diego. For most of his life, Pedro has lived just a short distance from the U.S.-Mexican border. Pedro, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. It's a pleasure to be on this important show.
Well, you're welcome. Tell me about your work for the American Friends Service Committee, what you're doing down there.
Sure. There are four major pieces to the work that I do, as well as my colleagues. Essentially, I do community-based organizing with migrant communities or migrant neighborhoods, those folks who traditionally might be undocumented or might be legal residents, but for one reason or another might not have access to the political venues that essentially make decisions for their lives. And so the idea is to create spaces so that migrants can organize for themselves and essentially impact those decision-making processes that affect their lives. We also do documentation of human and civil rights abuses, mainly by law enforcement agencies, but particularly by the Border Patrol along the border. We also do policy impact, which means surveying and analyzing legislation that is being proposed in Congress, in the state, in the local level, and try to analyze how that legislation will ultimately affect the migrant communities in these areas. And aside from that, we also work with different allies, trying to work in with different community partners, which might include other community-based organizations, unions, interfaith groups, essentially to try to promote just and fair immigration reform.
That's a lot, and I would say that you've probably been busy for the last couple of weeks.
Yes, without a doubt. In fact, last week we were working nonstop and trying to help provide some logistical support to a lot of the students who were protesting and were taking to the streets and trying to send a strong message about their solidarity with their parents and with their family members who could be at risk of deportation because of the legislation that's being debated in Congress right now.
Well, what does that mean to people when we talk about building this fence and throwing people back, illegal immigrants back over the wall, as far as the people who are here and documented?
Well, from the perspective of border communities, from our point of view, we've seen how the border has been militarized over the past 12 years or so, since 1994, when the different operations were put in place along the border. Operation Gatekeeper here in San Diego, essentially what it did is it pushed the migrant flows into very treacherous terrain, into the mountains, into the deserts, and so it increased the number of deaths that have been taking place over the number of years. In fact, this past fiscal year was the deadliest to date for the Border Patrol in terms of the number of people that perished trying to come into the U.S. And so when we talk about border enforcement issues and when we talk about immigration reform that includes purely enforcement issues, we're talking about a real impact in border communities, an increase of human rights abuses, an increase of the Border Patrol often running rampant and within communities, and not being, not having a way, the community doesn't have a way to address those sorts of concerns where they're actually going to be heard. And so when we're talking about comprehensive immigration reform and all this legislation that's being proposed, you know, we're really concerned that any sort of package that includes an increase in border enforcement mechanisms really isn't dealing with the immigration phenomena at its root causes.
It's only dealing with in the middle.
It's only dealing with the symptomatic issues.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. All right, we're gonna Pedro, we're gonna take a short break, and we'll be right back.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 Federal and California Returns, W-2-1099 Info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
If you own a Volvo and you want quality repairs and great service at a fair price, then take your Volvo to Hunt's Auto Repair in Seaside. They only work on Volvos, and they can do any needed service and repair, including all factory recommended maintenance. Owner Mike Brooks is a Volvo certified and factory trained technician with over 16 years experience. Mike's partner Tracy is also a factory trained Volvo service advisor. Many Volvo owners in the area already know and trust Tracy to take care of their Volvos.
Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside, is a locally owned and family-operated full-service Volvo repair shop where Mike and I feature honest, quality service at a fair price.
Bring your Volvo to us, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that you leave satisfied and fully informed about your Volvo. Remember, that's Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside. For more info, give us a call at 583-9820.
That's 583-9820.
Is what you're doing in the market working for you? Are you happy with the results? Are you making money? Sundays at 2 p.m., KRXA is proud to present a new show entitled Safe Money and Retirement Talk, hosted by R.J. Moyer of About College Funding and the Protect My Assets Radio Network. RJ will present the latest information necessary to help you protect your money and ensure a comfortable retirement. Join RJ Moyer every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. for Safe Money and Retirement Talk, right here on KRXA 540.
This is KRXA 540. I'm Scott Dick, your host, subbing for Peter B. on the Peter B. Call-In Show. I want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show. You can call in at 899-KRXA. That's 831-899-5792. From Eureka, you can call toll-free 1-888-579-2540. I am normally Peter's military and veterans affairs correspondent. I'm on once a week at least with Peter for about an hour discussing military and veterans affairs. And I wanted to do this show today because I wanted to talk about the three I's that are important in the news. That's Iraq, Iran, and immigration. And so Pedro Rios from Project Voice from the American Friends Service Committee agreed to come on and talk to me about some in-depth issues facing the immigrant community. And you know, I think there needs to be a distinction between immigrants and migrants and illegal immigrants, etc. Pedro, welcome back.
Thank you, Scott.
Now, you do a lot of stuff down there, and it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's important work. And Pedro, maybe you could help me with something. This number of 11 million, that's all we hear. There's 11 million illegal immigrants in the United States stealing jobs from Americans. Where does that number come from?
Sure. The number sort of tends to fluctuate. A lot of folks will use the number as low as 8 million. I've seen studies that will claim that there are up to 25 million people who are undocumented in the United States. And essentially, according to the Urban Institute, which has been a seminal institution in providing facts and figures for immigration issues, what they do to come up with the number is that they estimate the number of undocumented immigrants by subtracting the legal foreign-born residents from the total foreign-born population. And the figures that they use to come up with the number is from the current population survey. And so there is a method to that number. And of course, the numbers, the studies that tend to use the higher numbers, up to 25 million, tend to be numbers or organizations that sit more on the right wing, that tend to promote an anti-immigrant agenda and try to sort of provide false information as to the figures that are being used. And so consequently, we've seen even congressional representatives that tend to use those numbers that really are based on just sort of a political bias and aren't necessarily grounded on any sort of scientific calculation.
It's a scare tactic.
Definitely, it's a scare tactic. You know, if you think of 25 million people who are undocumented. The other issue to look at is back in 1986 when IRCA was signed into law, which was generally known as the Amnesty Law of 1986, there were roughly 3 million people who were able to adjust their status and become legal permanent residents. So if we take that figure and consider that in the past 20 years or so, it just wouldn't make sense that from 3 million that it would grow up to 25 million. It makes more sense that a more accurate representation of the figure would be anywhere between the 8 to 15 million people who are undocumented and who are in the United States.
Now, see, the scare tactic plays into the images we've seen, whether they were night vision cameras showing people in the hordes, and if you really count them, there may be 10 or 12 which look like a horde, or 6 or 7 people climbing over the fence that doesn't exist down near San Diego. And they paint that picture as a swarm of illegal immigrants coming from Mexico, and you notice how they're only talking about Mexican illegal immigrants.
taking jobs away from Americans. They don't pay any taxes. They consume critical assets such as education and medical services. Let's talk about some of those. I consider those to be myths.
Sure.
And let's talk about the real source of illegal immigrants in the United States.
Sure. I would say that around 40% of those who are here without documents are what are known as visa overstayers. So people who enter the country with a visa, either a student visa or a visa as a visitor, and overstayed their visa. And so essentially, they didn't cross the border as the images depict, this sort of invasion, if you will, the language that that sometimes people use to describe that process. So a lot of folks who are here as undocumented are here because they overstayed their visa. So there's a lot of misinformation about who makes up the undocumented population within the U.S. Now, it is important, though, to mention that a great majority of those who are undocumented are Mexican nationals. They are Mexican citizens. But it's also important to consider the historical ties that the U.S. has with Mexico. It's important to consider the connecting land between both countries. And then more importantly, the economic agreements that the U.S. has entered with Mexico that in many ways have influenced the migration patterns over the past 10 or 15 years.
So if we took the Pedro Rios, if we took the 40% of visa overstays, that's 6 million. We took that away from the 15, that's 9 million. Or if we took it away from the 8 million, that's significantly less. I mean, we're talking, sorry, can't take 6 million from 8 million, but you know what I mean. The number changes significantly where it doesn't seem it doesn't seem like such a fearful threat. It reduces and eliminates that idea of a swarm of illegal Mexicans coming across the border.
Without a doubt. And I think that what we've seen in terms of the migration patterns over the past 10 years is that since the hardening of the border enforcement measures, a lot of people who traditionally would come and work and then leave and return to Mexico can no longer see that as a viable action because they will be apprehended at the border or might risk dying in the desert. And so instead of returning back to Mexico or to their other country of origin in Latin America, one of the solutions that a lot of people see is to bring their families across into the U.S. And so we've seen an increase over the past 10 years of a lot of women and children, non-traditional migrants, are now coming into the U.S. as migrants. Some of the shelters in the Tijuana and the Mexican side of the border will say how the shifting population and demographics of migrants tends to be overwhelmingly women and children who are coming across to meet up with their husbands because the husband can no longer return to Mexico or to Central America or to South America. So in many ways, the hardening of the border enforcement has also contributed to an increase of migration from non-traditional sectors in society of those countries.
To non-traditional, right. I'm talking with Pedro Rios. This is Scott Dick, subbing for Peter B. and the Peter B. Collins Show. We're going to go to a break. And
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
I'm Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Show. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m., we'll explore Monterey Bay regional wine and food, markets, restaurants, menus, and prices. I'll interview winemakers, chefs, and other key players. We'll put food and wine together, and then we'll take them apart. If it's handcrafted beer or goat's milk and it's good, let's talk about it. Join me every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. to discuss food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay region, and especially delicious slice of our tasty planet. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Tom Hartman.
When Thomas Jefferson wrote Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness into the Declaration of Independence in 1776, it was the first time in the history of the world that the word happiness had been used in the founding document of any so-called civilized nation.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
And Ronald Reagan was the guy who began to take it apart. He was the perfect front man for really what was fundamentally a vicious idea.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
This is Scott Dick, your fill-in host for the Peter B. on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you'd like to call in and talk to Pedro and I, you can call in at 899-KRXA. That's 831-899-5792. From Eureka, toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. Pedro and I were talking about the way the border fence acts as not just a one-way valve, but a two-way valve, and that if it's a strong one-way valve, the old paradigm, if you will, of migrants going home is pretty much shattered, and now they're bringing their families into the United States illegally. Is that right, Pedro?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, essentially, the border, just to recap, the border enforcement provisions that have been in place for the past 10 years have made it difficult for people to continue with what used to be traditional migrant patterns of working in the U.S. and returning to their home country.
Exactly.
And now they can't do that, and so a solution has been to bring their families to meet up with them in the U.S.
I phrase that way because it's sort of a right-wing talking point, if you will, and it bothers me that no one on any side of this debate has really got into the myths and perceptions of immigration. That number that you gave me, that 40% are visa overstays, you're the first person I've heard say that, Pedro.
Yeah, and that's something that has actually been documented for the past. I think there was the study that came out in 1994 by Jeffrey Passel and Michael Fix that essentially stated the same figure, about 40% of those who are here as undocumented R visa overstayers.
And I just wanted that to be, I wanted the my listeners and Peter's listeners to understand that there's a lot of myths and misconceptions about illegal immigration and the our American-Mexican border. Now, a lot of critics say that Mexicans, undocumented Mexican workers, come to the United States and take jobs away from Americans. Can you just address that point?
A lot of the jobs that migrants do in the U.S. are jobs that have been called jobs that no one else would do. Take, for example, the agricultural fields. Here in I'm in San Diego County, for example. In San Diego County, there's Carlsbad, a city of Carlsbad that produces strawberries. It produces a large part of the flower market, and it's very strenuous, very difficult work. And I would... I don't think that most people would be willing to work for the type of income that they would receive in picking strawberries off the fields. And I think that one of the myths that is usually presented by people on the right tend to say that there is a large viable workforce that would be willing to work in the fields and that would replace the migrant workers. I hardly doubt that that would actually happen. A lot of the other industries include the hotel industry, the tourist industry, the meat packing industries in the Midwest part of the country. You know, all of these are industries that are highly, include workers from other parts of the country. From other parts of the world. And I really doubt that. That there's a great interest by people in the U.S. who are born in the U.S. To want to do and work in those sorts of industrial areas.
Well, Eric Schlosser in Fast Food Nation addresses just that issue with the factory farms that support the big fast food chains, and the fact they could not get Americans to fill those jobs, and they practically, the fast food factory farm processing, you know, meatpacking plants, practically created a whole, how do I put this, Pedro? Just imagine a whole bunch of Greyhound buses lined up and traveling around in Central and Mexico and Central America, bringing people up to work in those factories.
Yeah, that's very true. A lot of these companies, especially the meatpacking industry, will directly hire from rural areas in Mexico. Because they know that it's easier to spend the money, it's more profitable to spend the money to hire workers directly from Mexico and not deal with trying to have to struggle with finding willing workers in the U.S. because they just will not find people who would want to do that sort of work.
It's because it's hard and it's dangerous. That's the problem with it.
That's true. It's hard, it's dangerous, and in many ways it's very disposable.
And see, that's a myth that they take jobs away from Americans. That's one. And two, let's talk about the tax issue, because you hear that's the second thing that comes out of righties' mouths. They don't pay taxes.
Everyone who goes to the corner store, who goes to the grocery store and purchases something pays taxes, pays state taxes, pays local taxes, pays federal taxes. And so that's the very first misconception that needs to be cleared. Everyone pays taxes whenever they buy something. I think the larger point, unfortunately I don't have the figure for this, is that most of the people who are working, who work under someone else's Social Security number or a made-up number, are having their money subtracted by the Social Security Administration. There are billions of dollars that are sitting in an account that are just not being claimed by workers who have been working in the U.S. for numerous decades and unfortunately cannot collect on their Social Security benefits because they don't have legal status here in the U.S.
Go ahead, sorry.
And so just to finish the thought, there are billions of dollars that are sitting that are unaccounted for because people don't have the status to make a claim on that money that was subtracted from their regular paychecks.
That, you know, I had forgotten when I sit in front of the television and listen to them say they don't pay any taxes. Well, they have to eat and they have to buy gas, and a lot of people buy cars and they have cell phones. All of those things, what we consider to be normal living requirements, those are all taxed. You're absolutely right. They pay taxes like everybody else. What people are talking about is the income tax or Social Security, and that's, as you said, is being funneled to a different place. So now the last one that I'm concerned about is that the misconception, and I'll just set it up for you. I think it's a misconception that people come from Mexico, they come into the country illegally, and then they just sit on their butts and consume education and medical resources.
Sure. I think it's a very important misconception that needs to be clarified, and I think it's a misconception that was essentially promoted in the mid-80s when Ronald Reagan was president. There was the idea of the welfare mother who would sit in her couch and collect benefits for her many children. It's definitely a misconception that has been carried over to the migrant population as well. It's important to note that most people who are here as undocumented on the first issue do not qualify for public benefits unless there's some sort of emergency measure that needs to be taken for a health-related issue.
You mean you're talking about emergency medical care?
Emergency medical care, of
okay.
course. And it would be, who would want to deny emergency medical care to anyone who really needs it? And I think that's, in many ways, it's a moot point, you know, to argue that we should be denying emergency medical care to people who really need it. But for the most part, most people do not qualify for public benefits. And so it's a misconception that needs to be clarified and needs to be debunked as much as possible. And to say the least, I hardly doubt that people would want to come into the U.S. to collect on public benefits. You know, most people who we ask for the reason for coming across is because they say we're hungry and we want to work. And we have family to support back home. And I think one of the key examples of this is the number of the amount of money that is sent back to their home countries. It's astronomical. And I think that just speaks volumes to how much people are working here in the U.S.
Well, what do you think is the benefit? I mean, I have my idea, but the benefit of bringing this up, this issue, with such fanfare in 2006, during the right before the midterm elections. What do you think that the right's getting out of this?
Well, I think you hit the point there. I think that because it is an election year, we need to the politicians need to target the emotional valve of the electorate. And I think that immigration is the perfect sort of issue that brings up very emotional responses from the populace in general. We've seen the response to the Minutemen, for example. The Minutemen, caused a lot of media attention last year. They're starting to do so again this year. But essentially, their points of view, their arguments are trite, they're old, they offer nothing new to the immigration debate, except for the emotional sort of response that they're able to get, and they're able to get the reaction that they need from the politicians. And it's very unfortunate, because a lot of the truth around this the immigration debate and the immigration phenomenon gets thrown out the window.
We have about a minute before we have to go to another break. Pedro Rios from the American Friends Service Committee. Can you tell me if you have any plans for blunting the Minutemen's approach down there?
Well, not necessarily. One of the things that we've been doing has been promoting a video called Rights on the Line, Vigilantes at the Border, that we're presenting to different groups. Essentially, it makes two points, that the Minutemen and Vigilantes are nothing new to the immigration debate, that they've been around for many years. The KKK did the same in 1980 in San Diego. They called it the Klan Border Watch. Their rhetoric is essentially the same. And we're going to continue to present that video with different friends and people who are interested in learning more about the vigilante phenomenon.
When we come back, I've been speaking with Pedro Rios. And I'm Scott Dick, filling in for the Peter B. and the Peter B. Collins Show. When we come back, we're going to talk about the economic impact of making all these illegal immigrants, visa overstays or not, go home. This is Scott Dick. We'll be right back.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything so tasty, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
It's tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay Area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Interns, W-2 1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today, 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
This is Scott Dick, your host on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm subbing for Peter B., who's on vacation. And the call-in number is 899-KRXA. That's 831-899-5792 from Eureka. Eureka.
This country on its own, some people say that it has the fifth largest economic budget in the world. And California depends heavily on the migrant labor force. The tourist industry, as I mentioned before, the agricultural fields, the restaurant industry, there are a lot of small businesses that are opened up by immigrants throughout the state. And I think it's a reflection of the rest of the country as well. And so if everyone who was undocumented, doesn't have papers, were rounded up and were sent to their country of origin, I think that that would be very catastrophic for the United States, who depends heavily on the migrant labor force. And I think that, you know, we could easily see the downfall of the U.S.'s economy. And I think that it's a mistake to think that if that were to happen, that the U.S. would continue to survive and be as strong as it is economically in the world. I think that it's a serious miscalculation to think that that would be the case.
Do you have any idea on the dollar amount?
Unfortunately, I don't have an idea on the dollar amount. I was trying to find that information out, but I don't have it. I do know, for example, that back in the 40s, for example, when Operation Wetback was in place, and a lot of Mexican migrants and actually and U.S. citizens were returned to Mexico, it played out in a very disastrous way, not only economically, but also socially, culturally. There were a lot of people that were separated from their family members. You know, it can cause a real havoc on communities in general, and a real toll on the economic vitality of the United States.
Sure, and thank you for that. Pedro, do you want to take a call? We have a caller from Dave. He's from Eureka.
Sure.
Dave, this is Scott. You're on.
Scott and Pedro, one of the things you posed the question, why might the Republicans be making such an issue right now out of immigration? Because while good programs such as this one is talking about immigration, we are not talking about graft or illegal wars. We're not talking about indictments. We're not talking about national debt expanding at a rate of $3 billion a day. We're not talking about election fraud or unanswered questions about 911. We're not talking about the polls and how badly they're going. We're talking about immigration. And I think there is that for them. They have diverted a bit.
You mean you think they looked around and said, we need a hot-button issue that's going to get us some points, and they picked immigration, and for what I can tell, inside the Republican Party itself, it has blown up in their face. Would you call that a fair assessment, Pedro?
I think so. I think what we're seeing is a division between the rank-and-file Republicans and those who are in office. You know, we see, for example, for those of you who follow those sorts of politics, the neocons in office tend to side with the businesses, you know, the companies who really benefit from the immigrant labor force, whereas the rank-and-file Republicans are tending to take a more nationalistic perspective, and so that manifests itself through groups such as the Minutemen and other vigilantes. But the effect has been that both the Republicans and Democrats, in many ways, have to speak to the issue of immigration because it's such a hot button issue during this election year. They can't have an election campaign without speaking to the issue of immigration.
Well, would it be fair to say that and Dave, you can answer this too if you want, that the pro-business Republicans and big business are siding with Democrats on this issue because they know the value of inexpensive labor? Within one of you two.
I would say that's a fair assessment. I would say that you know, the increase of border enforcement measures over the past 10 years has not curtailed the flow of immigration, but it gives off the appearance that it is curtailing it. If we don't pay attention to the number of people that have died on the border, you know, if you go to urban centers in San Diego and other large cities throughout the border, there's the appearance that immigration is no longer as a human rights disaster, really.
Dave, do you have any more questions for
Zerts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium. Or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
CHP on scene working on clearing that out. It is very wet, so we have some mudslides to be aware of. Boulder Creek Highway 9 at Saratoga Toll Road, the northbound lane is completely blocked by mud and rock, so CHP on the scene got a crew en route as well. And also in Big Sur Highway 1 at Coast Road, we have mudslide and rocks blocking the northbound lane there as well. This report is brought to you by Sears. How long does it take to give your home a spring makeover? Just 48 hours. It's the 48-hour sale going on this Friday and Saturday.
Are you back with me?
Yes, indeed. I'm right here.
You know, I'm starting to see some of the nonsense coming out of D.C. that we saw in 2003, and I'll give you a good example. Here's a report on the Telegram.
I'm blanking.
That's okay.
From the New Yorker. It'll come to me in a minute. But we have we've had very frequent, very frequent rumors that that this would take place either on the part of the United States or on the part of Israel, serving as a surrogate for the United States.
Sure, like they did in Iraq in the 80s.
That's right. And what worries, I think, everybody is that that a strike on Iran would be it would be extraordinarily ineffective and would result in a conflagration throughout the region that probably we would never see the end of. I mean, never. It would inflame the entire region. It could endanger our oil supplies. It's no accident that Iran has been saying in the last few days, or telling the world in the last few days, that they've been successfully testing a number of missiles that can't be detected by radar. Whether that's true or not, it indicates that they're, you know, quite ready to confront anything that the United States or Israel would throw at them.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question: is what did you make of these new missile and torpedo tests?
Well, the problem is that, you know, we have no verification that what the Iranians say their new missiles are able to do is actually true. However, as I'm saying, the Iranians are indicating that, you know, that they do have firepower. And that if they're attacked, they don't plan to just simply sit by and capitulate. They're in a much much stronger situation than Iraq, and I think that's one of the things that most Americans don't really understand. If Iraq was an easy battle of getting rid of Saddam and defeating the Iraqi army was easy, Iran will not be. Iran has the potential for more than a million troops. And Iran is more than three times the size of Iraq. It's about the size of California, Nevada, and Arizona. So we're talking about a huge territory, a much, much larger population, nearly 70 million people, and a very well-trained army with great equipment. Most of it, in fact, was the result of U.S. Support during the years of the rule of the Shah. So Iran would be a very formidable enemy. Iran, however, has not attacked another nation for over 300 years. So the idea that that Iran might initiate a first strike against Israel or any nation is not likely.
Well, we've labeled, and I say we, and I'm channeling the spend and torture Republicans from Congress and the president and administration, we've labeled Iran as a terrorist state. And the search for nuclear weapons now is the big accusation that they're leveling against Iran. But didn't the United States have something to do with the entire Iranian program to begin with?
Yes, indeed. The United States initiated the Iranian nuclear program 30 years ago during the regime of the Shah. Gerald Ford in 1976 offered Iran a full nuclear cycle, the very nuclear cycle that they are now they've now developed. So we offered it to them at an earlier stage, and Iran has carried forward their nuclear program exactly as it was originally planned. The United States claims that Iran had hidden this program, but in fact, nobody was really looking. They didn't announce it for some years, but nevertheless, it should be no surprise to anyone that they have a nuclear energy program. And I should point out to your listeners that that there is no evidence whatever that Iran has a nuclear weapons program. The energy program is freely acknowledged, but there is no weapons program that anyone has been able to detect. And that includes the IAEA and other groups. What the United States government has repeated so many times that Iran must not get nuclear weapons, we must deny Iran nuclear weapons, that I think most of the American public thinks that they actually have them. And the best estimates that anyone has is that if Iran were to start today working 24/7, that it would be 5 to 10 years before they could even get their first first prototype nuclear weapon out. And when you look at Pakistan and India, which actually and Israel, which have actually verifiable nuclear weapons already in production, then it makes the situation in Iran look far less dangerous than with its neighbors.
Well, when we start hearing Dick Cheney talk about Iran being an imminent threat with nuclear weapons, we need to just hang on to our hats and our wallets.
Absolutely, because there is no imminent threat, just like there was no imminent threat with Iraq. Anyone who I think listens to this kind of rhetoric from Dick Cheney should pay attention to what he said in the past and how he said it and what the results were, because they were disastrous for our nation.
Now, another question that leads me to sort of a military question, Bill. If we were to attack, and I just have a minute left, so I'm going to make this question short. If we were to attack Iran, we would mobilize not only their own population, but is it conceivable that other Shias around the world would be united with the Iranians?
Not just Shias, but the rest of the entire rest of the Middle East. The sympathy would be with Iran and not with the United States. We heard some retired U.S. military people saying we could attack Iran, but we would need the help of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. That's the craziest thing I ever heard in my life. It's insane. I mean, really, quite insane. And the idea that, you know, Saudi Arabia would come in on the side of the United States to mobilize an attack against Iran is just beyond the realm of all possibility. It's completely crazy.
This is Scott Dick, your host, subbing for Peter B. I'm talking with Bill Beeman, professor of anthropology at Brown University. We'll be right back after this break. The race that ranged from Asia way to Rio de Janeiro. A crazy craver look, today's the day that in a major way I make you say, oh look, he saved the day and also paved the way.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
You already know that Joe Rombi's La Mia Cucina in Pacific Grove serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma in an elegant, comfortable setting. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombi's incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. Your only stop for such delicacies as portobello mushroom ravioli, spaghetti bolognese, crab cakes, and sand dabs is Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa in PG on 17th, just above Lighthouse. Drop by on your way home from work or any time. And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombi has three rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove. Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances, giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436, 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show, About College Funding, this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding, Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names.
Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
The Del Monte Cafe features authentic American food carefully prepared at very reasonable prices. Hungry for delicious omelets, pancakes, sandwiches, and pasta dishes? Come visit us for breakfast and lunch at the Del Monte Cafe, located at 1642 Del Monte Boulevard in Seaside. We're open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday from 7:30 to 2 p.m. For takeout orders, call us at 394-7851. That's 394-7851. The Del Monte Cafe, 1642 Del Monte Boulevard, Seaside.
This is Scott Dick subbing for Peter B., the Peter B. on the Peter B. Collins Show, and that's the Grand Poobah Brass Band, one of Matt's favorite. It cracks me up. This is Scott Dick, I said, 899-KRXA, if you want to call and talk to me, or Bill Beeman, that's 831-899-5792. My producer's holding up a piece of paper that says, read that number slower, 899-5792. If you're from Eureka, call toll-free, 1-888-579-2540, and you can talk to either one of us. Be happy to answer questions, and Bill would too, I'm sure. Even though I didn't ask him, Bill, you're just going to have to answer questions.
I'll be happy to.
Bill, I don't think my listeners, I don't think Peter's listeners really have a handle on Iranian and Iraqi society. And I think that most Americans, or the ones susceptible to the Bushisms, think of Iran and Iraq as a sort of glorified Afghanistan, where you see people living basically in hand-hewn adobe houses, mud huts, if you will, and with donkey carts. And, you know, I think if you could spend a minute or two talking about Iranian and Iraqi society, I think it would be a benefit for our listeners.
Certainly. I think that one of the hallmarks of both Iranian and Iraqi society is that people are very well educated. These are both literate societies. They're individuals with very old and very deep cultural roots, and the populations have extraordinarily well-educated individuals. You couldn't have the kind of technological advances that you have in Iran and Iraq if the population wasn't well-educated. They are cosmopolitan, sophisticated. Iran has perhaps the highest, well, it definitely has the highest internet usage of any nation in the Middle East today. And one of the things that's, I think, most interesting about Iran is the degree to which Iranians turn to blogging as an important form of self-expression and also a form of criticizing their own government, which many Iranians are not happy with.
And let me interrupt for a second, Bill. Last week, when I was on with Peter B. doing a military veterans correspondence piece, I referred to this photograph. It's one of my favorite photographs, and I'm not sure the average American that saw that was run on UP or AP, one of those systems, and it was a Sunni mullah. And the U.S. troops were making a visit in the mosque, and they were in his office. And on his desk, or actually on a credenza next to his desk, was a 36-inch plasma TV.
Right. No, there's no incompatibility between Islam and technology. In fact, the Islamic world has embraced modern technology in a very important way. For instance, Ali al-Sistani, who is the most revered Shia cleric in the world today, and the person who really has shaped the political life of Iraq after the invasion, has a website, and you can it's AliAlSistani.com, and you can go there and you can ask questions, and you'll get an answer. I've done it many times. I'm not sure that he personally answers the questions that you put to him, but his followers all around the world can quite easily access him. And actually, most of the clerics in the Shia world also maintain websites. So these are sophisticated modern people,
Many are very sincere Muslims, just as in the West you have people who are very sincere Christians or Jews. And there's no incompatibility between Christianity and Judaism and modern technology and modern life. So if any of your listeners had the desire to go to Iran, it's quite easy to go. The whole world goes, as a matter of fact, except the United States. It's a wonderful place with wonderful architectural monuments and great cultural traditions, and the people who do go are treated.
You're down there. You probably see the border patrol with nothing against those guys, the ones who are honest and doing a good job. I do have a sympathy for military and paramilitary organizations if they do their job the way they're supposed to do it, and that includes not torturing and committing human rights violations. Anyway, without the machine gun toting guys up in the watchtowers and it being a symbol for dictatorship, how effective do you think that wall would be?
Well, I don't think that it would be effective at all. I think that, just looking at recent history, again, looking at the past 12 years since the implementation of the different operations along the border, the use of Joint Task Force military units on the border, it tends to just promote violence, and it tends to promote conditions whereby people are going to die and people are going to face more selective, protections of the U.S. Constitution, and it's a reality that we've seen. And I think that what ends up happening is that you have so many Border Patrol officials in many cases that the job in many cases becomes very boring, unfortunately, and there's not a lot to do in the more urban areas. And I think that if we look at the recent history, it's going to point to the fact that it just hasn't worked the way border enforcement has been sold to the people.
Sure, because a lot of other countries a lot of other illegal immigrants have come to America and they didn't cross the Mexican-American border. They came different venues, different ways.
Of course, just as we started the program, there are many people who overstayed their visa and who didn't necessarily have to cross the border to be here and now are undocumented. That's generally a factor that isn't considered in the immigration debate.
Where do you think we're going to go from here, Pedro? We have a couple of minutes left. We have about 30 seconds.
I think that, unfortunately, the immigration debate, the immigration reform legislation will probably, again, signal more border enforcement, which is not to our benefit. However, I'm hoping that there is some form of legalization for the people that are in the U.S., those hardworking people who really do the jobs that most of us would not even imagine doing.
Exactly. This is Pedro Rijos, Project Voice Regional Organizer for the American Friends Service Committee, and I'm your host today, Scott Dick, filling in for Peter B. on the Peter B. Collins Show, and we'll be right back after the CBS News.
Hello, I'm Jose Mendez.
And I'm Ren Bradley. Please join us on our new show,
Labor Matters,
on Sunday starting March 5th from 1 to 2 p.m.
We'll be talking about issues of importance to the labor movement and raising awareness of the local struggles of the working men and women of our community.
And, as time permits, state and national issues. Don't give up the fight.
You already know that Joe Rombies serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombies' incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombies' La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. Parting shots at Tom DeLay.
I hope that this is the beginning of a new day.
A victim of internet pedophiles tells his story.
My life was a swirl of drugs, money, and sex.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Loyal staffers greeted Tom DeLay with cheers and applause when he arrived at the Capitol today after announcing he's decided to resign from Congress. Democrats were applauding for another reason. Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid said he hopes DeLay's departure marks a turning point.
The issue about Congressman DeLay resigning is not about him. It's about a culture of corruption that has developed in this Congress.
I'm Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. Under a dark legal cloud, DeLay threw in the towel, claiming his innocence and saying he was doing it for the party to avoid the risk of a Democrat beating him in the November election. Once the most powerful Republican in Congress, DeLay had to give up his leadership job after he was indicted for laundering campaign money in Texas. He's also at the center of a growing lobby and bribery scandal in Washington involving Jack Abramoff. Two of DeLay's former top aides who later worked for Abramoff have pled guilty, one just last week admitting he took bribes to influence legislation. He's now cooperating with prosecutors investigating members of Congress, presumably including DeLay.
Asked today if this has hurt the Republican Party, President Bush said this.
My own judgment is that our party will continue to succeed because we're the party of ideas.
He said he wishes Tom DeLay all the best. Now this.
Nice shot! Time out!
Basketball's fun, but I need a cold drink.
My mom's making rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Ovaltine?
Let's go!
I guess the kids will be home soon.
Let's make rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Come on! Sarah's mom's making...
rich chocolate Ovaltine.
All right!
My kids love Ovaltine's rich chocolate taste. And I love all those vitamins and minerals that you won't find in Nesquik powder.
Mom, we're back!
Who wants Ovaltine?
We do!
We better make more.
More Ovaltine, please!
If you have allergies, discover new Allivert Citrus Burst. The instant it touches your tongue, it bursts into action. And you know allergy relief is on its way. New Allivert Citrus Burst is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a great-tasting, quick-dissolving tablet. Get the allergy relief you need to keep going. Try new quick-dissolving Allivert Citrus Burst. Experience the relief. Use as directed.
Congress heard disturbing testimony today from a teenager who went online looking for friends and found himself pulled into a life of exploitation by pedophiles. CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein has the story.
An online friend paid Justin Berry, then 13, $50 to take off his shirt in front of a webcam.
As more clothes came off, more people contacted me. I thought I had achieved online what eluded me in real life. I was popular.
Ernie Allen, who helps exploited kids, calls online sexual abuse a growing problem.
Children are a commodity, and this is a way with relatively low risk to make a lot of money.
Sharon Cooper offered this advice to parents.
Be careful not to let children have internet access in their bedroom.
She says predators are often lurking on popular websites. Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
How did you sleep last night? If you're like many Americans, the answer is not very well. Researchers at the National Academy of Sciences estimate that 70 million of us have sleep problems and as many as 30 million have chronic insomnia. Lack of restful sleep can impair the nervous system and the immune system. They estimate that sleep problems cost the nation billions of dollars in medical expenses, accidents, and lost productivity. While we might not be getting enough sleep, we're getting too much to eat. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports on a new government study of obesity in America.
It's a study that puts the entire nation on a bathroom scale. CDC researchers find the percentage of children with weight problems has risen significantly. More than a third are now overweight. 17% are obese. Dr. Cynthia Ogden led this study in the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Dietary patterns and exercise patterns are set in childhood, so it is a concern that we see this increase in just a short time of 6 years.
Same upward trend for adult men. Among women, though, a surprise. The figures are leveling off. A hopeful sign.
But there's still a third of American women remain obese.
And two out of every three adults are overweight. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Hurricane forecaster Dr. William Gray at Colorado State University predicts an active season, but not as active as last year.
Our best estimate is that we'll have in the Atlantic Basin about 17 named storms, 9 hurricanes.
There were 27 named storms, including 15 hurricanes in 2005. Gray believes there's less chance this year of a major hurricane making landfall in the United States. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Sam's Club knows that behind every small business, there is a dream.
I dreamed of being on the lake. Now I have a canoe rental business.
My dream was being able to take care of children. Now I have my own preschool.
Every year, small businesses account for more than 40% of private sales in America. And every year during National Small Business Week, Sam's Club honors small business owners with an appreciation breakfast. Join us Wednesday, April 12th from 7 to 10 a.m. Let us show you how Sam's Club can help with your dream. Sam's Club, in business for small business.
Get the good stuff!
Napa Auto Parts has everything you need to keep your car looking great, like Turtle Wax Ice Synthetic Car Polish. Unlike conventional waxes, it can be applied in direct sunlight, even on hot surfaces without streaking. Use it on all exterior trim to restore color and shine with no white residue. The complete Turtle Wax Ice Synthetic Car Polish Kit also includes a custom applicator and microfiber cloth, all for just $13.99 at Napa. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
This is Scott Dick filling in for the Peter B. from the Peter B. Collins Show. You can call us at 899-KRXA or 831-899-5792. And Eureka, you can call us toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. I'm filling in for Peter B., as I said before, and my next guest is William Beeman, professor of anthropology and Middle Eastern studies at Brown University. He speaks several languages, and I mean several, in the region, including Persian. He's written numerous books in Iran and has one coming out on Iraq. My favorite qualification for Professor Beeman is that he made Lynn Cheney's, that's Vice President Dick Cheney's wife, he made Lynn Cheney's list of insufficiency. I don't know what Matt did to the air in here, but I can't talk. Let me go back. My favorite qualification is that he made Lynn Cheney's list of insufficiently patriotic Americans when, before the war with Iraq, he refused to agree that the war would be a cakewalk, and that country was more complicated than was thought by the spend and torture Republicans working for President Bush at the time. In other words, he said, it ain't going to be a cakewalk. This is a complicated issue, complicated country, and therefore Lynn Cheney put him on her list. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you very much. Yes, indeed, that's a fond memory of mine.
Well, anybody that got that was placed on her insufficiently patriotic American list became my heroes. We just automatically went to the top, and you were on that list.
Well, you know, it is really terrible when people who have expertise in the area are willing to offer their advice and have it rejected in precisely that way. It's discouraging, but I think that over time it's certainly been proven that those of us who really did have expertise in the area were trying very hard to inform the administration that they needed a more adequate preparation, and unfortunately our advice was not listened to.
Well, let's get to your qualifications on Iran, especially in that region. How long have you been working and writing about Iran?
Oh, more than 30 years now. I went first to Iran when I was actually in college, and I had a wonderful experience, and I decided to go ahead and specialize in that area.
So you've been... Okay, now I'm stuttering, because you speak Persian, but what other languages from that area do you also speak?
Well, Arabic and Turkish, and I think everyone who's involved with the Middle East knows the three major languages from the region. And I also know some South Asian languages and some East Asian languages as well. But with Persian, Turkish, and Arabic, you're fairly easily able to operate in the region. Arabic also gives you a really good background for Hebrew, which is very closely allied to Arabic.
See, and I think that's important for our listeners to know, Bill, is that you're not coming at this from a purely academic sort of, I can't read or write any of the languages, but I'll listen to what the analysts tell me. You're coming from first knowledge, first-person sources, and you spent a lot of time with people in Iran, as well as in, you're in communication with them off and on now, aren't you?
Yes, I am, and I think that you're absolutely right, that a lot of the people in Washington who bill themselves as experts in the region actually have never been there and don't speak the languages, and it's very difficult for me to understand exactly what basis their expertise has.
Well, I think what they're doing is doing that. Well, somebody told me, or I have a friend of a friend of a friend who said, they're put at the mercy of guys like Chalabi, who fed them complete hogwash with they bit hook, line, and sinker because they didn't have the capacity to challenge it or check it.
That's right, and we have individuals like Ahmad Chalabi and who were able successfully to lobby the Department of Defense in Washington and also the State Department and convince them that if they put him in charge that the United States would continue to be able to dominate in the region. Unfortunately, the Iraqi population, I think, saw through this particular ploy, and as he's now a minor player in the Iraqi political scene. But I will tell you, don't count him out. He's a very clever man.
He's a chameleon, and he was bringing in $300,000 a month from the CIA before that all went in the toilet.
That's correct.
Before he got caught actually handing information over to the Iranians. Well, I don't know where to start with you first, Bill, whether Iran or Iraq. So let's just talk briefly about the build-up to war with Iran.
Well, the United States has been at odds with Iran for more than 27 years, since the time of the Iranian Revolution. And what's really important, I think, for everyone to understand is that the entire plan for the reworking or rebuilding of the Middle East had already been started in the early 90s by the same people who we identify now as being neoconservatives, like Dick Cheney, like Don Rumsfeld, Richard Pearl, John Bolton.
Oh, you mean the spend
Douglas Feist.
Bill, you mean the spend and torture Republicans.
That's right.
Go ahead.
And they first of all were very upset that George Bush Sr. Did not remove Saddam Hussein from power. In 1996, they produced a position paper for then Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, in which they suggested that Israel's safety would be secured first by removing Saddam Hussein. Then, once Saddam Hussein was removed, which they thought was going to be a very easy task, then they would destabilize the government of Syria and then the government of Iran. And then they felt that by doing that, that would reduce support for groups that were opposed to Israel, like Hamas or the Hezbollah in Lebanon, and that would ensure Israel's safety. So the plan for regime change throughout the Middle East already was in place before 9/11 or before anyone thought of invading Iraq a second time.
Do I detect a slight miscalculation on their part?
It certainly was not a cakewalk, and the idea that somehow it was going to be an easy process to destabilize all these governments and change them was an extraordinarily foolish idea. Nevertheless, they had a lot of hubris and really felt that the United States was unstoppable, and that somehow, if they destroyed all the governments in the region, that new governments that would be favorable to the United States would spring up in their place.
That just makes me laugh. No unintended consequences. Whatever they did,
it would come to fruition
exactly as they'd planned.
Well, this is why this group is sometimes labeled as neo-Trotskyites. because Leon Trotsky also believed in the same kind of dynamic. That is, that if you took everything down to bare earth and destroyed everything, of course, for Trotsky, the idea was that communism would come, would spring up in its place.
Mm-hmm.
And that these, the neoconservatives believed that democracy would spring up in the place of a vacuum. So this was a really severe miscalculation. It's as if there was no culture, there was no religion, there were no existing governments or populations, that that somehow they would be, you'd be able to completely erase the tablet, and that the natural state of things would be to have a Western-style pro-American democracies come up in the place of the existing governments.
Bill, has there ever been a case in the history of the world that in a power vacuum a democracy sprang up?
Well, no. Democracies are really hard work. You have to lay the ground for them. You have to prepare the population in a very educated way. And actually, democratic institutions are not uniform throughout the world. Every society has its own form of democracy, and it's going to conform with the cultural ideals and cultural norms of the particular society in which it occurs. I mean, the idea of public self-determination is an excellent idea. I think everyone wants a system where the public is able to determine its own leaders and its own policies, rather than living under dictatorship. No one wants that.
Correct.
But the idea that, you know, that somehow you can impose a set of democratic institutions on a population is an extraordinarily foolish notion, because the models that one society has for democracy are not going to be shared by the other society.
I agree. This is Bill Beeman speaking with Scott Dick. I'm the host, filling in for the Peter B. Show. We're going to go to a break, and we'll be right back. More with Professor William Beeman.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Peter Eichhorn, owner of Eichhorn Incorporated, a company dedicated to designing and creating of ecologically sound masonry projects to fulfill your particular desires and needs. Let me work with you to make your dreams real and your dwelling an enchanting, personalized home, one with nature, a true reflection of your inner desires. Make this new year special, and let me assist you in your quest. I have a lifetime of experience, I'm honest, my prices are affordable, and I love what I do. Call me at 393-1300. That's 393-1300.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with its hot vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at Cookies, Pies, Banana Chocolate Bars, Macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand. Fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Every
CHP on scene working on clearing that out. It is very wet, so we have some mudslides to be aware of. Boulder Creek Highway 9 at Saratoga Toll Road, the northbound lane is completely blocked by mud and rock, so CHP on the scene got a crew en route as well. And also in Big Sur Highway 1 at Coast Road, we have mudslide and rocks blocking the northbound lane there as well. This report is brought to you by Sears. How long does it take to give your home a spring makeover? Just 48 hours. It's the 48-hour sale going on this Friday and Saturday.
Are you back with me?
Yes, indeed. I'm right here.
You know, I'm starting to see some of the nonsense coming out of D.C. that we saw in 2003, and I'll give you a good example. Here's a report on the Telegram.
I'm blanking.
That's okay.
From the New Yorker. It'll come to me in a minute, but we have a we've had very frequent rumors that that this would take place either on the part of the United States or on the part of Israel, serving as a surrogate for the United States.
Sure, like they did in Iraq in the 80s.
That's right. And what we're what worries, I think, everybody is that that a strike on Iran would be it would be extraordinarily ineffective and would result in a conflagration throughout the region that probably we would never see the end of. I mean, never. It would inflame the entire region. It could endanger our oil supplies. It's no accident that Iran has been saying in the last few days, or telling the world in the last few days, that they've been successfully testing a number of missiles that can't be detected by radar. Whether that's true or not, it indicates that they're, you know, quite ready to confront anything that the United States or Israel would throw at them.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is what did you make of these new missile and torpedo tests?
Well, the problem is that, you know, we have no verification that what the Iranians say their new missiles are able to do is actually true. However, as I'm saying, the Iranians are indicating that, you know, that they do have firepower, and that if they're attacked, they don't plan to just simply sit by and capitulate. They're in a much much stronger situation than Iraq, and I think that's one of the things that most Americans don't really understand. If Iraq was an easy battle of getting rid of Saddam and defeating the Iraqi army was easy, Iran will not be. Iran has the potential for more than a million troops, and Iran is more than three times the size of Iraq. It's about the size of California, Nevada, and Arizona. So we're talking about a huge territory, a much much larger population, nearly 70 million people, and a very well trained army with great equipment. Most of it, in fact, was the result of U.S. Support during the years of the rule of the Shah. So Iran would be a very formidable enemy. And Iran, however, has not attacked another nation for over 300 years. So the idea that that Iran might initiate a first strike against Israel or any nation is not likely.
Well, we've labeled, and I say we, and I'm channeling the
the spend and torture Republicans from Congress and the president, the administration. We've labeled Iran as a terrorist state, and the search for nuclear weapons now is the big accusation that they're leveling against Iran. But didn't the United States have something to do with the entire Iranian program to begin with?
Yes, indeed. The United States initiated the Iranian nuclear program 30 years ago during the regime of the Shah. Gerald Ford in 1976 offered Iran a full nuclear cycle, the very nuclear cycle that they're now they've now developed. So we offered it to them at an earlier stage, and Iran has carried forward their nuclear program exactly as it was originally planned. The United States claims that Iran had hidden this this program, but in fact nobody was really looking. They didn't announce it for some years, but nevertheless, it should be no surprise to anyone that they have a nuclear energy program. And I should point out to your listeners that that there is no evidence whatever that Iran has a nuclear weapons program. The energy program is freely acknowledged, but there is no weapons program that anyone has been able to detect, and that includes the IAEA and other groups. What the United States government has repeated so many times that Iran must not get nuclear weapons, we must deny Iran nuclear weapons, that I think most of the American public thinks that they actually have them. And the best estimates that anyone has is that if Iran were to start today working 24/7, that it would be 5 to 10 years before they could even get their first first prototype nuclear weapon out. And when you look at Pakistan and India, which actually and Israel, which have actually verifiable nuclear weapons already in production, then it makes the situation in Iran look far less dangerous than with its neighbors.
Well, when we start hearing Dick Cheney talk about Iran being an imminent threat with nuclear weapons, we need to just hang on to our hats and our wallets.
Absolutely, because there is no imminent threat, just like there was no imminent threat with Iraq. Anyone who I think listens to this kind of rhetoric from Dick Cheney should pay attention to what he said in the past and how he said it and what the results were, because they were disastrous for our nation.
Now, another question that leads me to sort of a military question, Bill. If we were to attack, and I just have a minute left, so I'm going to make this question short. If we were to attack Iran, we would mobilize not only their own population, but is it conceivable that other Shias around the world would be united with the Iranians?
Not just Shias, but the rest of the entire rest of the Middle East. The sympathy would be with Iran and not with the United States. We heard some retired U.S. military people saying we could attack Iran, but we would need the help of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. That's the craziest thing I ever heard in my life. It's insane. I mean, really, quite insane. And the idea that Saudi Arabia would come in on the side of the United States to mobilize an attack against Iran is just beyond the realm of all possibility. It's completely crazy.
This is Scott Dick, your host, subbing for Peter B. I'm talking with Bill Beeman, professor of anthropology at Brown University. We'll be right back after this break. The race that ranged from Asia way to Rio de Janeiro. A crazy great, but look, today's the day that in a major way, I made you say, oh, look, you saved the day and also paved the way.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
You already know that Joe Rombi's La Mia Cucina in Pacific Grove serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma in an elegant, comfortable setting. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombi's incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. Your only stop for such delicacies as portobello mushroom ravioli, spaghetti bolognese, crab cakes, and sand dabs is Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa in PG on 17th, just above Lighthouse. Drop by on your way home from work or any time. And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombi has three rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove. Imagine how nice it would be if your mortgage broker knew as much about the ins and outs of specialized lending programs as your trusted mechanic knows about your car. A mortgage broker willing to take the time to open the hood of your financial strengths while checking under the engine for costly money leaks. Make sure your mortgage broker has the experience, integrity, and know-how to provide you the optimal financial tune-up for your particular circumstances. Giving you staying power over the long haul and the capacity to take advantage of life's opportunities as they chance to appear.
Hi, I'm Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage in Salinas. Let me help you fine-tune your future real estate plans. The price of gasoline is through the roof, but interest rates are still near all-time lows. Don't let this opportunity pass you by. Give me a call today at 757-0436. 757-0436. I'm Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage and looking forward to working with you.
Join R.J. Moyer for his new weekend show about college funding this Saturday at 10 a.m. on KRXA 540. R.J. Moyer brings to the microphone a unique perspective on the benefits of a college education, and he shares with you his knowledge on how to substantially reduce your out-of-pocket college expenses.
This is R.J. Moyer. Join me for About College Funding Saturday morning at 10 on KRXA 540, sponsored in part by The Potting Shed in Aptos.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
The Del Monte Cafe features authentic American food carefully prepared at very reasonable prices. Hungry for delicious omelets, pancakes, sandwiches, and pasta dishes? Come visit us for breakfast and lunch at the Del Monte Cafe, located at 1642 Del Monte Boulevard in Seaside. We're open 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday from 7:30 to 2 p.m. For takeout orders, call us at 394-7851. That's 394-7851, the Del Monte Cafe, 1642 Del Monte Boulevard, Seaside.
This is Scott Dick subbing for Peter B., the Peter B. on the Peter B. Collins Show, and that's the Grand Poobah Brass Band, one of Matt's favorite. It cracks me up. This is Scott Dick, I said, 899-KRXA, if you want to call and talk to me, or Bill Beeman, that's 831-899-5792. My producer's holding up a piece of paper that says, read that number slower, 899-5792. If you're from Eureka, call toll-free, 1-888-579-2540, and you can talk to either one of us. Be happy to answer questions, and Bill would too, I'm sure. Even though I didn't ask him, Bill, you're just going to have to answer questions.
I'll be happy to.
Bill, I don't think my listeners, I don't think Peter's listeners really have a handle on Iranian and Iraqi society. And I think that most Americans, or the ones susceptible to the Bushisms, think of Iran and Iraq as a sort of glorified Afghanistan, where you see people living basically in hand-hewn adobe houses, mud huts, if you will, and with donkey carts. And, you know, I think if you could spend a minute or two talking about Iranian and Iraqi society, I think it would be of benefit to for our listeners.
Certainly. I think that one of the hallmarks of both Iranian and Iraqi society is that people are very well educated. These are both literate societies. They're individuals with very old and very deep cultural roots, and the populations have extraordinarily technological advances that you have in Iran and Iraq if the population wasn't well educated. They are cosmopolitan, sophisticated. Iran has perhaps the highest, well, it definitely has the highest internet usage of any nation in the Middle East today. And one of the things that's, I think, most interesting about Iran is the degree to which Iranians turn to blogging as an important form of self-expression and also a form of criticizing their own government, which many Iranians are not happy with.
And let me interrupt for a second, Bill. Last week when I was on with Peter B. doing a military veterans correspondence piece, I referred to this photograph. It's one of my favorite photographs, and I'm not sure the average American that saw that was run on UP or AP, one of those systems. And it was a Sunni mullah, and the U.S. troops were making a visit in the mosque, and they were in his office. And on his desk, or actually on a credenza next to his desk, was a 36-inch plasma TV.
Right. No, there's no incompatibility between Islam and technology. In fact, the Islamic world has embraced modern technology in a very important way. For instance, Ali al-Sistani, who is the most revered Shia cleric in the world today, and the person who really has shaped the political life of Iraq after the invasion, has a website, and you can it's AliAlSistani.com. And you can go there and you can ask questions, and you'll get an answer. I've done it many times. I'm not sure that he personally answers the questions that you put to him, but his followers all around the world can quite easily access him. And actually, most of the clerics in the Shia world also maintain websites. So these are sophisticated modern people. Many are very sincere Muslims, just as in the West you have people who are very sincere Christians or Jews, and there's no incompatibility between Christianity and Judaism and modern technology and modern life. So I think that if any of your listeners had the desire to go to Iran, it's quite easy to go. The whole world goes, as a matter of fact, except the United States. It's a wonderful place with wonderful architectural monuments and great cultural traditions, and the people who do go are treated with extraordinary hospitality and kindness. And for many people who have made this trek, they say it's one of the most wonderful trips that they've ever taken. So I think that there is no, certainly no inherent hostility on the part of the Iranian people toward the American people. The difficulties that we have seem to be at the level of our two governments.
And that seems to be almost always the way it is. Bill, I want to tell a little story for the listeners about how even the sophisticated U.S. military makes these kind of boneheaded assumptions. And the example is when we were planning to go into Bosnia in 1994-95, the psychological warfare guys were talking about doing a radio drop, because they had come out of Haiti and out of Somalia, and in order to get information to the Somalis and the Haitians, they did a mass radio drop, and so people could listen to broadcasts. And as they were talking about making a radio drop, they talked about how they would get information to the people of Bosnia. And the foreign area officers sort of scratched our heads, because it sounded like the infrastructure in Bosnia was a lot more destroyed than we knew. So, lo and behold, we go on a reconnaissance in November of 95, and, of course, a lot of the terrain is devastated. Bridges, high-tension power lines are down, electricity's out in many places, all the tunnels are spooky, but all the lights were out. And we were in a van driving, and we reached Mostar, and there's a high-rise apartment buildings. Now, they didn't have heat anymore, so they used wood. So every apartment had a stove sticking out of the wall. So they're burning wood. But you know what? Every light on every floor had a blue glow coming out of it. They were all watching TV. It's the end of a three-year just devastating war. And by golly, if those people weren't watching TV with satellites, when we got a satellite dish for our headquarters, they bought it in town from a Bosnian radio shop, you know, radio television shop. And so these boneheads from the psych ops guys, they want to do a radio drop because the Bosnians are so backwards. Because they were believing, I don't know, somebody's propaganda. And what I'm afraid for the American people is we're going to face that same kind of stupidity and ignorance when it comes to dealing with, on a military terms, with Iran.
Well, there's something like 17 Iranian TV channels, and I don't know how many radio channels. Iran broadcasts in English to Europe. The people who do the broadcasts in Iran are, for the most part, European or American educated. They're very sophisticated individuals. In fact, I've done a couple of interviews with Iranian TV, and I've been amazed because the Iranian commentators know more about American politics and political life than most Americans do. They're right on top of everything, and I think that anyone who underestimates people in this part of the world and or thinks that they're ignorant or backward is really making a very severe mistake.
Well, we're living that in Iraq right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, the second question is, what's with this guy, the leader of Iran? Is he a fruitcake, or what's his deal?
It's a rather complicated question. If we have a few minutes, I'll be glad to lay it out for
we
you.
We have 3 minutes or three and a half, and then we can continue after the break. But go ahead, start us off.
One of the important things about Mr. Ahmadinejad is that he is not the person who was picked by the clerical leaders. He emerged from this election after a lot of elimination, and he represents a group of people who were involved in the original revolution and who feel that they were cut out of power by the clerical establishment, who essentially purged the original revolutionaries about 6 months after the revolution took place.
And they purged them because they were nuts.
Well, they were. They purged the secular nationalists, and they purged the communists.
I got it.
From the revolution, and established essentially a religious-based state. So Mr. Ahmadinejad is a very religious person, but he's not a cleric. And his supporters all feel that they really were cut out of power. And his principal, he has no control over foreign policy. He has no control over the nuclear program and no control over defense. So the presidency in Iran is a very limited kind of office. So whatever he says has absolutely no consequences for Iran's actual actions in the world.
Does he have the clerics holding their heads every time he talks?
Absolutely. They're quite upset about it. And the reason that he is using this extreme rhetoric is to invoke the rhetoric of the original revolution in order to carry out his real agenda, which is economic reform. And so he's trying to get the population on his side in order to be able to get the political support he needs in order to carry out this economic reform. And it's unfortunate that he's using rhetoric that that attacks Israel and that seems to be detrimental to Jewish people, but actually it's not his intent. His intent is to solidify his base. And of course in the United States we know a lot about how politicians will aim for trying to get their political base on their side, and that's what he's about.
Well, when I saw that McCain had made amends with Falwell, that's one of those tit-for-tat kind of things. Don't criticize me, and I won't criticize you if you don't say anything stupid kind of thing.
Certainly. And the Jerry Falwell, of course, has made remarks that in many ways are just as extreme as the remarks of Mr. Ahmadinejad.
And Pat Robertson as well.
Pat Robertson, too.
Well, how come it's not better known in the United States that he's sort of limited in what... I mean, he can say anything he wants. The clerics aren't going to, remove him from office. But why is it this not more well known that he's really playing a certain card? He's playing poker, basically.
Actually, it kind of is known. There was an article that just came out in the current Time magazine that actually was a fairly good assessment of his situation and what he's able to do. And also, I should point out that NPR correspondent Mike Schuster went to Iran and did a profile of Mr. Ahmadinejad that was very accurate. So the information is there, but the U.S. government really doesn't want the American public to, I think, understand the nuances of Mr. Ahmadinejad's position.
Nuance,
because we're still in the business of demonizing Iran, and if there ever were an attack, they want the American public to have the worst possible opinion of the Iranian.
Nuance is something that we're not good at. This is Bill Beeman and Scott Dick. I'm subbing for Peter B. in the Peter B. Collins Show, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with a brand new reality radio show every Saturday evening, 6 to 7, right here on AM 5 on Progressive Talk Radio, AM 540, KRXA.
We all have dreams, and dreams inspire possibilities in our lives. For many of us, one of our principal dreams is to live in harmony with our natural environment, to convert that sacred space we call home into a physical representation of our true nature.
Hi, I'm Pete.
One program to discuss the astrology of personalities, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Learn how astrology can help you make better life choices. For more about me, visit frankdon.com. Join in every Sunday beginning April 2nd at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 AM, Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Here's Diane with a traffic report for the Peter B. Collins Show.
We have an accident in the Santa Cruz Mountains, Highway 17 at Glenwood Drive. Vehicle has been moved over to the right-hand shoulder. Also, a stalled vehicle in the Santa Cruz Mountains, Highway 17 at the Summit, stalled vehicle blocking the right lanes. Not exactly sure which direction of Highway 17, though, so CHP en route to check that out. Also, in Gilroy, Highway 152 at Lover's Lane, we have a stalled vehicle blocking one of the lanes there. And in Boulder Creek, Highway 9 at Saratoga Toll Road, be aware the northbound lane is completely blocked due to a mud and rock slide there. CHP is on the scene. This report is brought to you by Sleep Train. Now, sleep free till 2007 at Sleep Train. On approved credit, there's no down payment, no monthly payments, and no interest for 12 full months. Sleep Train is your ticket to a better night's sleep. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
This is Scott Dick. I'm back. I'm subbing for the Peter B. for the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm here with Bill Beeman, professor from Brown University. We've been talking about Iran and Iraq. And, Bill, we were talking about the nuance that we're not good at of Americans, the average American, knowing just what and how the president of Iran speaks for, speaks to, or his limitations. I don't think the average American realizes how limited, I mean, he can talk all he wants to, but really what kind of actions he can take.
He really is very limited. A good analogy for the president of Iran is a city manager rather than a mayor. He's a person who has a portfolio where he's concerned with the caretaking the internal affairs of the country, and his principal goal has been economic reform, and the wealthy classes in Iran, including the clerics, who've gotten very wealthy during the period from the revolution down to the present, are quite frightened by what he is likely to do, because he has already sold shares of national industries to lower income people in the country and allowed them to buy these shares on time. People are very concerned that he may try to nationalize private industry as well. And as a result, a lot of money has fled Iran. About $800 billion has been repatriated in Dubai and other places just across the Persian Gulf.
That's huge. $800 billion. That's
a lot of money.
That's a lot of money, and that weakens the overall economy when that much money escapes or
flees.
Well, yes,
of course. And but when he ran for office, he pointed out that the original revolution was supposed to benefit the poorer classes, and that it actually has not, and that what has happened is that the clerics and upper class businessmen have become extremely wealthy again, and so we end up with a two class system. One thing that has happened as a result of the revolution, though, is that education and health care has improved tremendously for the population as a whole, but wealth distribution has not taken place in a way that it was envisioned at the beginning of the revolution.
What kind of numbers are we talking about when Iran says that we're going to fiddle with the oil supply? Dollar or barrels per day, doesn't matter. Do you know?
Oh, my goodness. Well, Iran doesn't supply oil to the United States. Actually, the Iranian oil primarily is going to, well, first of all, Japan. Japan gets a lot of its oil from Iran. Iran has agreements with China for oil, and it also has agreements with some European states, principally Italy. So if Iran were to cut off the oil supply, all of those countries would have to get their oil someplace else. And since oil supplies are fungible, eventually it would also impact the oil supply for the United States and for other nations. What most people are most concerned about, however, is that Iran has the possibility, the capability of actually closing off the Straits of Hormuz, which is the very narrow waterway that separates Iran from the United Arab Emirates, and Oman. And it's a single deep channel, sinking a single tanker in that waterway would cut off oil supplies to most of the world.
Hmm. So, all right, that brings me to my next question. And the impact that Iran, the claims that Iran is having in Iraq, and that they're fiddling with Iraqi internal affairs, which really makes me laugh when I hear the Bush administration say that. Because I'm talking about fiddling somebody's domestic affairs, we've done that in spades.
Well,
is it because
also
the
not true? During the Saddam regime, what happened was that many of the leaders of the Shia community actually escaped to Iran to avoid being tortured or killed by Saddam, and so many of the members of the Shia community have ties to within Iran, and they go back and forth across the border. But what is really important to understand is that the center of theological leadership in the Shia world is no longer in Iran; it's in Najaf, and Ali al-Sistani is now the most important Shia leader in the world. So the idea that Iran is somehow affecting political affairs in Iraq is laughable, because it's exactly the other way around. And if Iraq stabilizes, it's going to be the Iranians who are going to be taking directions from Najaf, which is the true center of the Shia world, rather than people in Iraq taking orders from Iran.
That's another one of those nuances, Bill, that the American public, and it seems like the American administration, has missed completely.
Well, they absolutely did. And when you hear Don Rumsfeld or Dick Cheney saying that Iraq is not going to have an Iranian-style theocracy, then you really know that they don't know what they're talking about.
Among other things, though.
Well, Iran's government is considered an aberration from a theological standpoint from Shia. The rule of clerics is something that was established by the Ayatollah Khomeini as a matter of religious opinion. In Shiism, the Shia believed that there were 12 imams after the Prophet Muhammad. The 12th imam has disappeared. He's still alive, but he's in occultation, so he is not visible. And the Khomeini declared that in his absence, that the wisest clerics in the world would be the people who should rule in his place. The problem was that no other Shia theologian agreed with this. And so therefore, Ali al-Sistani and other Shia leaders believe that the government of Iran, the form of the government that is taken in Iran, is considered an aberration. It's blasphemous. So the Iraqis are not going to emulate the Iranian government, and you'll notice that in the Iraqi elections, no clerics even ran for office.
So does this explain why, out of all of this rhetoric on both sides, that the United States and Iran are going to talk about what's happening in Iraq, that where they're actually going to meet?
Well, it seems that they are going to meet, and what's very interesting is that the person who brought about the meeting is himself a cleric who's been accepted by both sides. And so he was a very good mediator, Bahar al-Hakim, who is a person who sat on the U.S.-sanctioned Iraqi Interim Governing Council, and is also recognized by Iranians as being somebody that they respect. So it could happen that finally the United States and Iran would get into dialogue about something. And there's no question that it's in Iran's interest to have a stable Iraq, and it's in the U.S. interest to have a stable Iraq. So we do have a common cause here.
That's great. Now, in one more minute, I was going to ask you about the influence of we talked about the influence of Iran in Iraq, and only one more minute to go. We're going to finish up with what do you think is going to happen in the next 9 months? I think that first in the next month that Rumsfeld's going to get fired or resigned. He's going to take time off to spend with family. How do you think this civil war in Iraq is going to go? You don't have much time either, sorry.
No, unfortunately, what is happening is that Iraq is reverting to the time before the British colonial rule in the 1920s, when Iraq was three separate provinces of the Ottoman Empire, who never really should have been put together in one unit, in one state. The entire country had been held together by the British Army or by military dictatorships. And so once you remove those coercive forces, then the country reverts to its natural state, and that's exactly what's happening.
I'm Scott Dick, and I've been with Bill Beeman, and this is the Peter B. Collins Show. Thank you very much, Professor Beeman.
The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Texas Congressman Tom DeLay is resigning from Congress. On KTRH in Houston today, resignation is a chorus of the same phrase. Party leader Howard Dean said, as House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said, and as her counterpart in the Senate, Harry Reid said.
It's not about him. It's about a culture of corruption that has developed in this Congress.
This as Republicans praised DeLay's leadership, and President Bush said the party itself is in good shape. And some Republicans are telling pundits the party's stronger now without DeLay. The hurricane season is coming. Yes, it'll be stormy again, and yes, some of them will be dangerous.
We likely have a very active season for this year, and the big question...
I'm 6 years.
The percentage of overweight and obese men also rose significantly. Among women, though, weights are leveling off. Even so, 66% of adults are overweight, 32% are obese, the highest proportions in our nation's history. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Ginger is good for a lot of things. Helps relieve nausea, for one, but that's small potatoes. Dr. Rebecca Liu at the University of Michigan says ginger helps fight ovarian cancer.
Normally, we treat ovarian cancer patients with chemotherapy, and one of the main problems in treating these patients is that people develop a resistance to chemotherapy. And we've found that ginger actually kills cells in a different way than normal chemotherapeutic agents do.
Dr. Liu says more tests are planned. To raise money for the schools, people were allowed to buy bricks and to etch their own personal messages in them. The upstate New York school removed any bricks that included the name of Jesus in them, but allowed others with religious themes. New York federal judge Norman Mordew says that's discrimination. Put the bricks back, he said. And besides, he also said, it's not government endorsement of religion for those bricks to be there anyway. On Wall Street, the Dow gained about 59 points to close at nearly 11,204. The NASDAQ picked up more than 8 points on the day. This is CBS News.
Get the good stuff.
Even with today's high-tech engines, a good old-fashioned oil change is still the most important maintenance you can do. Changing your oil every 3 months or 3,000 miles improves fuel economy and dependability and helps you avoid costly repairs. Right now at Napa Auto Parts, you can get Valvoline conventional motor oil for just $1.99 per quart. The price does not include state and local taxes or recycling fees. Napa, get the good stuff.
Get the good stuff!
Sam's Club knows that behind every small business, there is a dream.
I dreamed of being on the lake. Now I have a canoe rental business.
My dream was being able to take care of children. Now I have my own preschool.
Every year, small businesses account for more than 40% of private sales in America. And every year during National Small Business Week, Sam's Club honors small business owners with an appreciation breakfast. Join us Wednesday, April 12th from 7 to 10 a.m. Let us show you how Sam's Club can help with your dream. Sam's Club, in business for small business.
We Americans work a lot.
9 to 5, the all-American workday is falling by the wayside. A government report suggests 2/5 of employed Americans now work evenings, weekend, overnights, or swing shifts, including Kenya Robinson, a New York nurse.
Right about now is I don't have much of a social life.
Sociology professor Harriet Presser.
You're changing the circadian rhythms, which affect hormone levels, body temperature, chronic sleep deprivation that lead to higher rates of cardiovascular disease.
Just a third of Americans now work the traditional day shift. Jim Chenevy, CBS News.
MIT professor Nicholas Negroponte hopes to give simple $100 laptop computers to millions of the world's poor children. Microsoft has been critical, as has Intel. Professor Negroponte says they're just upset he's using Linux instead of Windows because it's so much faster and isn't full of holes like Windows. As for not having a hard drive, one of the criticisms, he notes, neither do BlackBerries and other PDAs, and look what you can do with them. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Nice shot! Time out!
Basketball's fun, but I need a cold drink.
My mom's making rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Ovaltine? Let's go!
I guess the kids will be home soon.
Let's make rich chocolate Ovaltine.
Come on! Sarah's mom's making...
rich chocolate Ovaltine.
All right!
My kids love Ovaltine's rich chocolate taste. And I love all those vitamins and minerals that you won't find in Nesquik powder.
Mom, we're back!
Who wants Ovaltine?
We do!
We better make more.
More Ovaltine, please!
If you have allergies, discover new Allivert Citrus Burst. The instant it touches your tongue, it bursts into action. And you know allergy relief is on its way. New Allivert Citrus Burst is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a great-tasting, quick-dissolving tablet. Get the allergy relief you need to keep going. Try new quick-dissolving Allivert Citrus Burst. Experience the relief.
This is Scott Dick subbing for the Peter B. and the Peter B. Collins Show. My next guest is Stacey Sullivan. She's a senior editor from the Institute for War and Peace Reporting. She's currently working in the States, but she covered the Balkans for Newsweek from 1994 to 1996. She's written for the New York Times Magazine, the New Republic, the Washington Post, the Boston Globe, the Times, and other publications. Her book about Albanian Americans' role in the war in Kosovo, Be Not Afraid, For You Have Sons in America, was published by St. Martin's Picador Press. Stacy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott.
You tire me. I have not written a thing.
Yeah, well, I tire myself, too, I have to say.
Well, just tell my listeners a little bit about the Institute for War and Peace Reporting and what your mission is.
All right, the Institute for War and Peace Reporting is a nonprofit organization that trains journalists in countries that are either recovering from war or dictatorship. So, in other words, places where there's not a free press. And what we do is go in and teach. We have classes, and we teach those who want to learn the basics of journalism, and then they write stories. We help edit them and get them into shape, teach them all about fact-based reporting, and then the stories are translated into whatever the local languages are and into English and posted on our website and then made available free to all the newspapers and radio stations. And we are in about 24 countries now, including Iraq and Afghanistan. Actually, all the stands. We're in Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan,
Kyrgyzstan,
most of the stands. We're starting a project in Pakistan. We're in the Balkans. We have a project in The Hague covering the Yugoslav War Crimes Tribunal. We have, about 24 countries.
And that's in order to blunt the sort of mainstream media or mouthpiece for the local government.
Sometimes it's to blunt the mainstream media, but often these countries don't have a tradition of a free press, and most of the media is controlled by one political interest or commercial interest or another, and a lot of the newspapers that exist are propaganda. So there's a complete lack of, there's no tradition of fact-based reporting, and
sure.
We feel that it's, I mean, the Balkans is a perfect example where the media really fanned the war and reinforced a lot of the traditional hatreds on all sides. And we really believed that if we could find liberal-minded, open thinkers from all sides of the war, so Serbs, Croats, and Bosnians, and teach them to write stories that are based on the truth, or at least as close as they could get to it, and work together, that this could help quell some of the prejudices that existed in the society. So it can both prevent conflict and then at the same time help a society recover from it afterwards.
Well, Stacey, I'll tell you one way that played out in Bosnia when I was there. It was before Clark took over as Supreme Allied Commander and Jawin ran the show. And even though Clark and Holbrooke had negotiated Dayton to include the entire electromagnetic spectrum, our guys, General Nash, first and foremost, and the Chief of Staff, did nothing to blunt the local Serbian AM radio broadcast. So when the Bosnians, Muslims, tried to repatriate, or at least to go back and visit their homes, and, you know, NATO spent a lot of time, a lot of money getting people together, assuring their security, and then moving them to their old home places, local Bosnian and Serbian radio would just put out the call for demonstrators saying the Muslims are going to come back and take over the communities that they'd won in the hard-fought war, blah, blah.
Exactly.
And we'd have instant riot.
That's exactly right.
And that's a
perfect example of the media being used to propagate hate and to undermine the peace process. And I think, you know, there was, during the war in Kosovo, NATO bombed the Serbian television station.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an extremely controversial move, and actually a lot of press groups protested it and said that that was, you know, you cannot bomb a civilian target like that. Those are journalists. They're not, that was not a military target. And there's a whole argument to be made that once you are spreading propaganda or anything, saying things to initiate violence, that actually you no longer deserve press protections.
Well, that was the case in Bosnia before, during, and after the war. As far as I could see in my historical analysis, is that Serbian media was, you know, instrumental in Milosevic's demonizing the Muslims and the Croats.
Yeah,
so
if there had been a free press, he might not have been able to do it.
He couldn't get away with it like he did. And, of course, watching the Serbians work while I was there, it was amazing how fast they could turn a peaceful situation into a riot.
They had instant riots. All they had to do was announce it.
Exactly. And then when Clark took over for Jawin, he made it he set out the edict to the units that when a radio station did that, they were allowed to kick in the door and basically take them off the air. So they legitimized themselves as a true military target because we were peacekeeping, and we can't keep the peace with them. They made the most outrageous statements.
God bless Clark.
Now, speaking of outrageous statements, you covered the tribunal for Milosevic's trial, didn't you?
I did for about 7 months.
And what did you find? Give me like the top three most interesting things that you enjoyed while you were there, listening to him rant and rave.
I think that on my very first day, I walked in and I saw Milosevic sitting in the dock, you know, behind the bulletproof glass. And my first reaction was I sort of felt sorry for him. He looked like this old man kind of sitting behind the glass at the tribunal. Then as soon as he opened his mouth, any sort of sympathy that you had completely vanished, because he would sit there and completely insult the witnesses that were testifying against him, some of whom were, you know, not high-level officials, but ordinary people who had suffered a lot during the war, and Milosevic was just ruthless towards them. The very first day that I was there, they had this man testifying who was a waiter at one of the casinos in Serbia, and he walked in and said, "Oh yeah, I saw Milosevic sitting there with Arkan," and he proceeded to list a number of other really thuggish paramilitaries. He said, "I had to pour the Chivas Regal whiskey for them." And that was the first time that we had the president of the country actually sitting down in a room with a bunch of stone-cold killers.
Well, they were thugs. I mean, Arkan the Tigers, they were one of those Serbian militias. One of the, I'll finish that sentence in a second, one of the German TV stations published, they showed videotapes that the Arkan Tigers and some of the other militia groups had taken while they were killing Muslim old women and men, grandfathers
right.
and grandmas. And they were real tough guys, you know, but they never faced the conventional forces just when it came to women and children, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
And I was really sorry to see that he was assassinated on the steps of a fancy hotel.
Yeah, it was a pity. But then again, he was assassinated.
Yeah. I have real mixed emotions about that. Not
exactly. That was a, you know, that wasn't a bad day for me. And I would have to say, ditto with Milosevic dying. I know a lot of people were really up in arms, talking about how it was such a travesty of justice and how Milosevic would not go down in history as a convicted war criminal. But he died alone in a cell in The Hague. He tried to outsmart the West by taking medication to stop his blood pressure medication in the hopes that he could go to Moscow and be with his wife. And it didn't work. He lost again. He outsmarted
himself.
He outsmarted the tribunal people for a while, and, you know, now he's dead.
Yeah, and she's a piece of work, too.
She's quite a piece of work. The other thing is, it wasn't like the verdict was going to come down, the judgment was going to come down, and the Serbian people were going to read it and say, "Oh, yeah, God, he did do it." No matter what happened, there were always going to be Milosevic supporters, and there's so much evidence that came out in that trial.
Exactly. And I'm Scott Dick. I'm subbing for Peter B. and the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm here with Stacey Sullivan from the Institute of War and Peace Reporting. We're going to talk about Kosovo. It looks like it's going to rear its ugly head again. We'll be right back after this break.
Tax time again, and there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund and, through electronic filing, get you that refund as soon as you need it, in 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks. The choice is yours. The personnel of Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. Jim Moore Income Tax at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to bring a copy of your 2004 federal and California returns, W-2-1099 info for 2005. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today. 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Nancy.
And we're from the Potting Shed.
In Aptos. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn, but if you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find.
The barn has a lot of charm. People tend to come there just because the atmosphere is really nice.
And they'll come and have a cup of tea, bring their dog if they have one. All the dogs who visit know exactly where the cookie jar is. So it's that kind of a place. People feel very comfortable.
When we started, we were just strictly a garden shop with pots and plants. But we had to evolve through the years because nobody needed pots and plants in the middle of winter. So we started adding things, and now it's a full-fledged gift shop.
We work very hard to try and find things that are unusual and eclectic and well-priced. That's what our customers want. We're open from 10 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday. Come by and have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Is what you're doing in the market working for you? Are you happy with the results? Are you making money? Sundays at 2 p.m., KRXA is proud to present a new show entitled Safe Money in Retirement Talk, hosted by R.J. Moyer of About College Funding and the Protect My Assets Radio Network. R.J. will present the latest information necessary to help you protect your money and ensure a comfortable retirement. Join R.J. Moyer every Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. for Safe Money in Retirement Talk, right here on KRXA 540.
Here's Diane with a traffic report for the Peter B. Collins Show.
We have a stalled vehicle in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Southbound 17 before the summit, this stalled vehicle is blocking the right-hand lane. If you were in Gilroy, Highway 25 at 101, there's actually a large pothole in the roadway there. Boulder Creek, Highway 9 at Saratoga Toll Road, we have a mudslide. The northbound lane is actually completely blocked, so CHP on scene, just waiting for a crew to come out and hopefully be able to clear that up. In Gilroy, also Highway 152 at Lover's Lane, we have a stalled vehicle blocking one of the lanes. And also Watsonville, northbound Highway 1 after Struve Road, mudslide there. This report is brought to you by Napa Auto Parts. Protect your car's engine with clean motor oil. Stop by Napa Auto Parts today and pick up Valvoline conventional motor oil for only $1.99 per quart. Napa, get the good stuff. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Thanks, Diane. This is Scott Dick, your host for the Peter B. Collins Show today. I'm subbing for the Peter B., and I'm here with Stacy Sullivan, Institute for War and Peace Reporting. She's a senior editor, and we're talking about Milosevic in the docket. Stacy.
Scott.
What was the second thing? That was an interesting thing you learned. What else was interesting? And we're going to get to Kosovo in a second.
About Milosevic?
Yeah.
One of the most interesting things for me, and this might be inside baseball for people that don't pay attention to the Balkans, but you remember the fall of Srebrenica, the
Absolutely.
Safe area where more than 7,000 Muslim men and boys were summarily executed. Well, it was that happened in July of 1995, and it was widely believed that Milosevic had severed his ties with the Bosnian Serbs by that time. But one of the things that came up in his trial was that several brigades of, or at least two, of Serbian police who were directly under Milosevic's command had participated in the Srebrenica massacre. So
again, this might sound a little technical, but Srebrenica, the fall of Srebrenica was the one thing that the tribunal had ruled was genocide. And to connect Milosevic to it was, it was a really big deal because it was the first time that one could, it was the only, it was the major evidence that they had to try to get him on genocide charges.
Now see, I think our listeners, Stacey, are going to say, well, what do I care about this and the Bosnian in Serbia, that's all old news and he's dead and, you know, it's pretty much over and we have all this other stuff with Iraq and Iran. You know, I want to just put this into perspective for a minute for my listeners, or for Peter's listeners, is that this isn't dead, and we're going to talk about Kosovo in a second, but this is the Balkans, this is part of Europe, and the there are still two indicted war criminals being protected by Serbia, and that's Ratko, I love this first name, because Ratko Mladic and Radovan Karadzic. And they were instrumental in the ethnic cleansing and genocide, and that's an open sore as far as the European Union, the United States, and Serbia is concerned.
Well, that's right. I mean, if you think about Bosnia was really one of the first major peacekeeping operation that we had, and the United States and its allies have invested hundreds of millions of dollars into making this state function. Even now, 10 years, it's now more than 10 years, 11 years after the Dayton Peace Accord ended the war, Bosnia is still very, very, a very divided country. I don't think we have, there's not a danger of Bosnia erupting into violence again, particularly because so much effort has been put into making sure that that doesn't happen. With, you know, initially tens of thousands of NATO troops on the ground and a very permanent and very noticeable international presence is still unresolved. And if you can think back to 1999, before the war on terror, the quaint idea of humanitarian intervention, we bombed, we being the United States and its NATO allies, bombed for 78 days in what was the first, it was the first major campaign that NATO undertook since it was created. Without being asked to intervene, we actually went into a sovereign country and bombed for 78 days to stop killing. I think it was also one of the only times in modern history that the United States acted not because of any real interests there before the Serbs, and that piece of land is, was, and always will be Albanian. And, you know, you can go back through history and argue both sides, but It essentially what you end up with is two people on the same piece of land who are unwilling to compromise and who, unlike in Bosnia, who really hate each other. I mean, that really people.
Albanians and Kosovo they've never mixed with the Serbians.
They were quite an insular group, very clannish, for good reason, because, I mean, they were oppressed. But there was never any intermarriage between Serbs and Albanians. They lived very separate lives on this same piece of territory for hundreds of years.
So now what's going to happen, Stacey?
Well, after NATO bombed for 78 days, Milosevic's forces finally surrendered and pulled out, and an international United Nations peacekeeping force foreign intervention was actually something that might work in the future, not something that was going to be hijacked and anyway, I felt like, you know, I would argue with my Albanian friends, the one time in modern human history that the great powers have intervened purely for humanitarian reasons, and this is how you behave. You know, I mean, it was very distressing to see. Nonetheless, the problem was pretty much ignored for 5 or 6 years. And then about 2 years ago, the Albanians got pretty impatient. You know, they want independence, and if they don't get it, if they don't get independence for Kosovo, they have absolutely no qualms about fighting another war. This time, they would be fighting NATO troops who were on the ground there. The notion that they could win is absurd, right? I mean, the Kosovo-Albanian guerrillas are not any match for NATO forces. However, you know, once NATO troops are on the ground and being targeted by hit-and-run raids, it becomes a lot, it's very uncomfortable. And
one becomes reminiscent of Iraq.
Yeah. You know, it could be a little insurgency. And it's pretty hard to fight when you cannot differentiate between the civilian population and insurgents. You know, I mean, this was, as much as I condemn what the Serbian forces did in Kosovo, they had a real problem on their hands, and that the whole Albanian population was against them. So whether it was old ladies or children, I mean, you know, it's just, you just didn't know. They didn't know who their enemy was, because it was everyone. And I don't believe that's going to happen in Kosovo, because I actually think that Kosovo will, the status talks are beginning now between the Albanians and the Serbs and international representatives to determine what the future of Kosovo's status is going to be. Of course, the Albanians want nothing less than independence, and the Serbs say, you know, no way can Kosovo be independent. But we've seen what the Serbs have done throughout the decade.
Exactly. Well, Stacey, we're going to just go to a break here, and then we'll come back. I'm Scott Dick. I'm subbing for Peter B. This is Stacey Sullivan from the Institute of War and Peace, and we're talking Kosovo. And like Stacey, we're hoping that Kosovo doesn't get ugly, but you never know in this world we live in.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
I'm Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Show. Saturdays from 1 to 3 p.m., we'll explore Monterey Bay regional wine and food, markets, restaurants, menus, and prices. I'll interview winemakers, chefs, and other key players. We'll put food and wine together, and then we'll take them apart. If it's handcrafted beer or goat's milk and it's good, let's talk about it. Join me every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. to discuss food, wine, and fun in the Monterey Bay region, an especially delicious slice of our Tasty Planet. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
You already know that Joe Rombi's La Mia Cucina in Pacific Grove serves the best Italian meals this side of Roma in an elegant, comfortable setting. What you may not know is that you can also enjoy Joe Rombi's incomparable cuisine in the comfort of your family room, dining room, or kitchen. Your only stop for such delicacies as portobello mushroom ravioli, spaghetti bolognese, crab cakes, and sand dabs is Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa in PG on 17th, just above Lighthouse. Drop by on your way home from work or any time. And if you're looking for the ideal private room for your next party, look no further than Joe Rombi's La Piccola Casa and La Mia Cucina. Joe Rombi has three rooms that can accommodate groups of any size from 16 to 60. For unforgettable meals in a private setting at your place or theirs, call 373-8116 or drop by La Piccola Casa, 17th Street between Lighthouse and Laurel in Pacific Grove.
Hi, this is Ed Schultz, America's number one progressive talker. Join me every weekday from noon to 3 here on KRXA 540. I'm based in Fargo, North Dakota, and we bring you news and views from the heartland of America. I'm fighting the righties every day on behalf of the working people who've made the nation great. Tell your friends to listen. Give me a call toll-free, 1-877-934-6833. The Ed Schultz Show, noon to 3 on KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
This is Scott Dick hosting for The Peter B. and The Peter B. Collins Show. I'm here with Stacey Sullivan. If you want to call in and ask Stacey a question about being a freelance journalist in the Balkans or about Kosovo or about what she's doing now with the Institute for War and Peace Reporting, call in at 899-KRXA. That's 831-899-5792. If you're listening from Eureka, call us toll-free at 1-888-579-2540. They said we were talking about the talks going to start in, did you say in 2 years?
No, they started now.
They started now.
It's supposed to end by the summer, and it'll probably be pushed back until the fall.
Who's on the negotiating teams?
Well, it's the former Finnish Prime Minister, Ahtisaari, is the UN representative. The American representative is someone that I'd actually never heard of before.
So they picked a heavy hitter to weigh in on that.
Exactly. It's a very high-profile person.
Mm, good. I bet you they raised $100,000 for the Bush campaign. Wait, that would fit under the criminal, crony, and corruption part of the Bush administration.
Yeah, they didn't know where to stick him, so they let him go take the Kosovo negotiation job.
Yeah, you know, that's like the woman who runs the Red Cross. She owns a little publishing company in North Carolina, so Red Cross, little publishing, same thing.
That's pretty qualifies you, apparently.
Yeah, but she's a pioneer, by golly. So we're going to negotiate with the Serbs on one side and the Albanians on the other side.
We also have the Europeans on one side and the Americans on one side. The Europeans will say, you cannot give independence to Kosovo because this sets a terrible precedent for Bosnia. It means it will give the Bosnian Serbs the possibility to say, look, you said no changing of borders, and yet you let Kosovo be independent, so why are we stuck here in Bosnia? We want to be part of Serbia. And they will also say that independence for Kosovo will never get past the United Nations Security Council because, you know, the Russians have their breakaway Republic of Chechnya and the Chinese have Tibet, and, you know, the Russians and the Chinese are never going to vote to allow a piece of territory to break off from one country and form an independent state.
Okay, I'm all confused because isn't that what happened in Slovenia and Croatia?
In some sense, yes. Technically, the Europeans will argue that according to the Yugoslav Constitution, the Slovenes and the Croats had a right to break away from the former Yugoslavia because they were full republics. However, Kosovo was only an autonomous province, and it did not have that right, which in my mind is just a completely bogus legalistic argument. It has nothing to do with morality or reality.
Well, they're invoking the domino effect also is pretty bogus because the idea that one will lead to another is, I think, silly on its face.
I think it's absurd. I think that you can simply say, well, Serbia, given what you did in Kosovo, you have lost the moral right to have it anymore. You know, you forced 500,000 people out of their homes and killed 10,000 people over a 3-month period. That's it. Plus you oppressed a people for 10 years in an apartheid state. You no longer have the right to govern this place. Sorry. Oh, Bosnia? You know, you expelled the non-Serb population and put the Croats and the Muslims in concentration camps. You lost the right to be in this territory. Period. Sorry. And the Serbs will listen. It's not, I don't believe that it's sets a bad precedent and it's going to mean the end of Bosnia as a unitary state. It's just not going to happen.
It's funny that they don't want to undo the misdeeds of the treaties from 1915 to 1918, but they're invoking the nonsense for Slovenia and Croatia. It makes perfect sense to me that the Europeans, I think, it was apparent to me during the war in Bosnia that they just wanted the Serbs to get it over with.
Yeah,
And there was a lot of information coming to us from our allies from the military side, saying it's for example when there was that mortar attack against the market in, I believe it was Sarajevo or Tuzla.
There were two. There was one in Tuzla, and there were two major ones in Sarajevo in markets.
I was part of a conversation with some Brits and Canadians that they said they were adamant. They pounded the table and said that the Tuzlans did it to themselves.
You know, even today, one hears these arguments that the Muslims bomb themselves.
In order to invoke worldwide outrage and gain the sympathy of NATO.
Right. Look, I mean, even if it were true that the Tuzlans bombed the market, which was the single largest loss of life in one day in Bosnia, by the way, it would not change the dynamics of the war. I mean, you look at a place like Sarajevo. It's a city that's flat and surrounded by mountains, and the Serbs had the mountains, and they had their artillery on the mountains, and the Sarajevans were on the flat part, surrounded by the shells we're lobbing in every single day. So even if, let's say, I personally don't believe that the Bosnians shelled themselves, which I'll tell you why in a minute, but even if they had, it doesn't change the other 10,000 shells that fell on Sarajevo during the 3.5 years of siege.
Exactly. And it's all part of that, European, we set it up the way it's set up, and we just don't want to mess with it because we could open up a whole can of worms. Not that they couldn't solve some problems, but they just don't want to open up a whole other can of worms because it's expensive to take care of their own continent.
Well, there were, I think, a couple of things happening also. I mean, the Serbs controlled the army, and they had controlled the government, and the Europeans were used to dealing with Yugoslavia on that level, and they, had the professional army, unlike the Bosnian, the initial criminals and thugs and the sort of pathetic army that it was, even though they were on the side of right.
Exactly.
They were a lot harder to talk to. And so when you had professional military men, I mean, I'm sure you had this experience, you would go and the Serbs would present themselves very well in meetings and offer you food and slivovitz and wine. And you'd go meet with the Bosnians and they are pissed off. And they can't offer you the spread, and they don't behave in a professional way because they're pretty desperate. So I think at some level the Europeans were kind of tricked and charmed by the Serbs, who can be, very charming people.
Oh, yeah, we could go back to the whole history of the first travel writers writing about what a great country that the Serbia was.
Yeah, that's right.
The Eagle and the Falcon, that
mm-hmm.
book. It's one big information campaign over about a 150-year period, as far as I can tell.
Although there's some good little story, little bits of truth here and there.
Exactly. Well, what's the downside of Kosovo going independent?
I mean, the downside is that it does set a bad precedent for the future of Bosnia. I believe it's easily one can overcome it. That's one. A lot of people will talk about the threat of a greater Albania. Actually, that's something I've never understood. That doesn't scare me all that much.
Well, Albania is just a smidgen on a big map of Europe.
Albania is a little smidgen on a big map of Europe. First of all, Albanians and Kosovars, that's what the Kosovo Albanians call themselves, Kosovars, they were separated for 50 years by a communist regime in Albania that didn't let anyone in or out. And they developed a lot of differences. They have kind of a different dialect. There's they are one people, but there's a lot of animosity between the two of them. I actually believe that one day they will be one country, but that doesn't scare. I've never understood what the threat of a greater Albania is. There is one major downside, and that is the plight of that little country, Macedonia, which is predominantly Macedonian and about a third Albanian, ethnic Albanian population.
Aha, that's where it gets thick. Okay, the plot thickens here.
That's where it gets really thick. And now I have pretty unconventional views on Macedonia. The Albanian minority in Macedonia...
Wait. Let me... you're lucky there are no... that nobody's around to correct you. It's the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia.
Correct.
Fyrom, by the way. So go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
So it is predominantly, as I said, it's, about two-thirds Macedonian, who are Slavs, and about a third Albanian. And like Kosovo, the Albanians and the Macedonians have lived on the same piece of territory for hundreds of years and not intermingled and not intermixed. It's a very segregated society in which the Macedonian Slavs have the power and the Albanians, you know, have their own kind of insular society. But they had been very much shut out of the official levels of society.
And let us not forget, Stacy, that some of our listeners may not know that the Greeks have a hand in Macedonia, because Macedonia is part of the greater Greek Empire.
Yeah, they have a hand in a symbolic way. They didn't want the reason that Macedonia is called Phyrom, the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia, is because the Greeks lay claim to the word to the name Macedonia. But I don't think they actually have any territorial intentions in Macedonia, nor do I think the Bulgarians. A lot of people say that both the Greeks and the Bulgarians would like to move into Macedonia and carve it up. I just don't see it happening. What I could see happening is an Albanian insurrection in Macedonia that was actually going on before 9/11. I had a lot of friends who were covering the guerrilla movement in Macedonia when the United States was attacked, and suddenly Macedonia felt so irrelevant. But the problem has not been solved, and it could still explode, and the Albanians there still do not want to be a part of Macedonia.
So we have had I don't know if we have any now, but we had battalions in Macedonia as peacekeepers before we moved into Bosnia. It was an ongoing peacekeeping operation.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I think the peacekeeping mission in Macedonia was the one that was always cited as a success in preventative diplomacy, because it forestalled, prevented a war from erupting in Macedonia until 2001, when we did have a little war in Macedonia, and it was the Albanians staging hit-and-run raids because they were sick of being shut out of the society.
Well, we have to go to a break, and we'll be back. This is Scott Dick hosting for Peter B., and this is Stacy Sullivan I'm speaking with, who is the Institute for War and Peace Reporting senior editor. She was covering the tribunal and other aspects of reporting on a free press.
Own a Volvo and you want quality repairs and great service at a fair price, then take your Volvo to Hunt's Auto Repair in Seaside. They only work on Volvos, and they can do any needed service and repair, including all factory recommended maintenance. Owner Mike Brooks is a Volvo certified and factory trained technician with over 16 years experience. Mike's partner Tracy is also a factory trained Volvo service advisor. Many Volvo owners in the area already know and trust Tracy to take care of their Volvos.
Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside, is a locally owned and family-operated full-service Volvo repair shop, where Mike and I feature honest, quality service at a fair price.
Bring your Volvo to us, and we'll do everything possible to ensure that you leave satisfied and fully informed about your Volvo. Remember, that's Hans Auto Repair, 384 Olympia Avenue, Seaside. For more info, give us a call at 583-9820.
That's 583-9820.
Are you looking for money for college? Every year, billions of dollars in financial aid go unclaimed because parents just don't know how to properly access those funds. Mistakes are made in filling out applications. Deadlines are overlooked. And ultimately, it's the student who loses out on desperately needed funds. R.J. Moyer, president of AboutCollegeFunding.com, offers solutions to your financial aid dilemma.
If you're the parent of a college-bound high school junior or senior, critical deadlines are rapidly approaching, and we do specialize in late-stage college funding planning. Regardless of your income, assets, or home equity, I can help you send your child to the college of his or her choice without spending your life savings. But you must take action now.
AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. Call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Hey, Diane, how about some traffic for that soggy afternoon?
I know. We actually don't have any accidents to tell you about, just a lot of mud.
Santa Cruz Mound southbound 17 before Brush Road, a mudslide and rocks partially blocking the southbound lane there. In Watsonville, northbound Highway 1 after Struve Road, there's mud and ice plant on the right-hand shoulder slowly creeping into the northbound lane. And in Gilroy Highway 25 at 101, be aware of a large pothole in the roadway. Also some flooding in Gilroy, Bloomfield Avenue at Fraser Lake Road. This report is brought to you by Allivert. Allergies, discover new Allivert Citrus Burst. The instant it touches your tongue, it bursts into action, and you know relief is on its way. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Diane, maybe that ice plant mud can creep into that pothole.
I know, that would fill it up. Be a smooth ride.
Thanks, Diane. Scott Dick, I'm your host, subbing for The Peter B. from The Peter B. Collins Show. I'm here with Stacey Sullivan from the Institute of War and Peace Reporting. We're talking Kosovo and the implications for independence for Kosovo and the rest of Europe and the greater Serbian Empire and Macedonia. And there's a lot of moving parts. And I think that Americans have gone to sleep on that because we've been so invested in what's happening in Iraq, and with good reason. And now with this new saber-rattling the United States is going through with Iran, it's sort of focused on Asia, Central Asia, but
it cannot be ignored. It might feel irrelevant when you compare it to what's happening in Iraq. And of course, you know, it feels like in Iraq there and in the war on terror, there's so much more at stake. But this little province of Europe is a place that we spent hundreds of millions of dollars, both in a bombing campaign and in a nation-building operation, and then ignored it for a number of years, and it could very well explode again if it is not given due attention. And it's not an impossible.
So, stay the course is not a strategy; it's a slogan.
Well, if you listen to Richard Holbrooke spoke recently on the 10th anniversary of Dayton, and he talked about putting the Dayton peace plan together with all the various Balkan leaders, and you know how incredibly detailed and difficult it was. And he said, you know, when we were done, they locked up all the leaders in an air base in Ohio. And he said, we had a 200-page document. And by the way, that was 200 more pages than what the Bush administration had for going into Iraq.
I'm not surprised. Stacey, we have a caller. You want to take a question from a caller?
Sure.
Let's see what happens. Jake from Arcata. Arcata. Hey. Do you have a question for Stacey or me?
Oh, yes, I do, Scott. Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good.
Yeah, Stacey, I got a question about a parallel I see here between what happened in Kosovo, where we supported the KLA. And the KLA insurgency, they did apparently make a lot of money off of the heroin trade. Likewise, in Afghanistan, the Northern Alliance insurgency that we supported that was fighting the Taliban, they, of course, made a lot of money off the opium trade. I'm kind of curious, what sort of role in the Yugoslavian conflict did drug money play with these insurgent movements?
Yeah, I mean, before the war in Kosovo started, Interpol, which is the European police, had documented Albanian participation in the heroin trade in Europe. I mean, it was pretty well known that the Albanians controlled the heroin trade and that a lot of the opium from Afghanistan actually moved through the Balkans. Having said that, the Kosovo Liberation Army was a popular movement. I mean, it was an insurgency that was supported not only by all of the Albanian population in Kosovo, but by a far-reaching diaspora in Europe and in the United States. And in my book, I tell the story of a Brooklyn roofer who started this Homeland Calling Fund that raised somewhere along the lines of $30 million among the Albanian-American community.
Stacey, let me interrupt for a second. That book is called Be Not Afraid, For You Have Sons in America, and the subtitle that I saw is How a Brooklyn Roofer Started the War in Kosovo.
Helped lure the U.S. into the Kosovo War.
Yeah, go ahead.
What he did is he raised $30 million amongst the diaspora and sent that money to Albania, where it was used to buy weapons, and then they were trekked across the border into Kosovo to help the KLA stage their hit-and-run attacks. Now, were the drug runners in Europe patriots who contributed to the fund? I have no doubt that there was some dirty money that went into the coffers of the Kosovo Liberation Army. But I can tell you that I really don't believe that that was the bulk of it. I mean, that the Kosovo Liberation Army was supported by every Kosovar Albanian that I've ever met. And they had, for 8 years, waged a pacifist resistance that in Kosovo and set up all these parallel structures that were supported by a far-reaching emigre community that donated 3% of their income to support these parallel structures. And what they say was a donation. I mean, every single Kosovar Albanian donated, and if you didn't, you know, you were ostracized from the community, and you knew it. And these were the same people that were donating to the Kosovo Liberation Army. The Albanians are a little-known diaspora, but they're pretty well-to-do when they run a lot of small businessmen, construction companies, restaurants. And I saw a lot of, you know, busboys and doormen and building superintendents donating to the fund. So I can't say that there was no dirty money. I believe there was, but I don't believe that that was the bulk of it.
Anything else, Jake?
Oh, yeah, I just appreciate the show today, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Jake. I appreciate it. Stacy, I ran into a Albanian much under the same kind of circumstances. I was looking for an apartment in New York City when I was going to school there.
That's right. Did you run the building?
It was actually a fairly elderly woman, and she ran the business. You could tell she was an authority there, even though she looked like a clerk, and her title was a clerk, but you could tell she ran the business. And at first, she was very aloof, and she asked me what I was doing at school, and I told her I was studying European affairs, blah, 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 and I mentioned Albanian, and I thought that the Albania was, I didn't know she was Albanian, was the next move Milosevic was going to make. After that, I got everything I ever asked for from the woman.
That's right.
It was the most amazing thing. She opened all these doors. You know, before they couldn't sign a lease for less than a year, and they didn't want to have a military clause and all that, and all that washed away when I talked to her. And then they didn't send my deposit after I moved to Europe, and I called her, and it was in the mail the next week.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're very, very loyal, almost to a fault. I mean, it's almost like being inducted into the mafia or something, you know?
the Albanian mafia.
I can tell you that I don't have to ever pay for a pizza in New York City again.
That's pretty funny.
You walk in and say a few words in Albanian, and you have some friends for life, and they run all the pizzerias in town.
I used to love listening in the 90s, early 90s and 80s to Albania, Radio Free Albania, their English broadcast.
Yeah.
It was the most humorous thing I'd heard coming over the radio airwaves. So I've known that Albania exists. Most Americans, I'm afraid to say, couldn't find it on a map.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Well, it was also this little hermit state. It was the last East European country to overthrow communism. Also has a beautiful coastline.
So in the last 2 minutes, is there something you want to sum up what to look for in the next, let's say, 18 months as far as Kosovo is concerned and the rest of the Balkans?
Well, if we're lucky, if things go well with the talks, I would predict that the Americans will exercise a heavy hand in a positive way and say that Kosovo should be given some sort of independence, but it'll be called conditional independence. And Serbia is just going to have to, I mean, if you just tell the Serbs Kosovo is going to have conditional independence, they're going to take it. They're not going to protest. They don't want to go fight for it. They'll probably take it. And if that happens, I think Kosovo can slowly adjust to becoming an independent state. If it doesn't happen, if the Serbs really kick up a storm and if the Europeans protest on the grounds that this sets a bad precedent, then I have no doubt that there'll be violence again. I mean, the Albanians still have stockpiles of weapons, and they will stop at nothing to get their independent state.
And there's not a large contingent of NATO troops in Kosovo left.
It's pretty small. Pretty small, and they, you know, I'm not a pro Albanian national. I mean, they have a plan underway, and it involves not attacking Americans, but going after Pakistanis and, you know, other nationalities that they believe are not as, you know, they still want to keep America on their side if they can, but not to the extent that they would lose their
yeah, the soft target of NATO troops, and there have been a few. Like in Srebrenica,
right.
It was the Dutch.
Exactly.
Stacy, it's been a pleasure. I think we want to have you back on again sometime. We'll talk about more on Kosovo and the Balkans and what's happening and your work with the war and peace reporting. I have a phone. We had off-mic phone call a while ago that said, do you want to start one of those in the United States to teach our journalists how to write for free and fair press? I thought that was interesting. He didn't want to stay on the line, but he wanted me to ask you that question. Maybe you could think about that here, especially in middle America.
Thanks a lot, Scott.
Thanks, Stacey, and we'll be getting back to you from the Peter B. Collins Show. This is Scott Dick. I had a great time subbing for Peter B. and the Peter B. Collins Show. It's on every day from 3 to 6. This is KRXA Radio, and we're the voice up and down the left coast for a progressive America, doing what we can to make the extreme right really, really mad at us. This is Scott Dick. It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Matt, and thanks, Peter B. I'll see you next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got Anthony Hamilton in the house tonight. He just came from our tour.
The Grove Market.